Members, the meeting is open. I wish to apologize for the delay in place of this technology. It has not been sorted yet, but there are things that we can just do of the committee. I think secretary for the committee will have to go through the agenda and then we see which one that will really give us the gaps in terms of the technology. That is a problem. Over to you, Jolani.
Thanks, Chairperson, and good morning to members and policy partners that are here today and everybody. The agenda for today, Wednesday, 11th of May, is as follows. Opening and welcome as Chair Sazan, and apologies, adoption of the agenda, and then the first item for discussion will be the briefing by the Public Neighbouring Health Advisor on the processing of a private medical bill, which is referred to the committee, and then we will be followed by comments by the department on the private members' bill. Then the committee will deliberate on those briefings and provisions and comments. Then it will be followed by the presentation by the Department of Home Affairs on immigration policy and regulations regarding the issue of weapons to foreign nationals. That presentation by GHA will also be followed by another presentation by the Department of Labor, also on the same issue of immigration policy and resolutions regarding the issue of weapons. The committee will get deliberate on both presentations, and then the last item will be the consideration of draft minutes. Thank you, Chairman. So can I say the apologies that I have received? I have three apologies. One for Mr. Odis, Mr. America, and Mr. Kawan. Thanks.
person of the members there is the agenda. I just, before I give over to you to look at it, that's the presentation, the process that is going to be outlined by the legal advisor of parliament, followed by the department. As we are members just going to listen today, we will then in the next meeting deliberate on it. All we are doing today, we are just consuming information from them while not engaging. We will engage as a committee in the next meeting. That's the error that that's what I want to outline. Members, that was my addition or editing of the minutes, sorry, of the agenda. Any other amendment that you want with the agenda of today? Honorable Mahaula.
Now, I want to check if that approach applies to presentation or if I'm only, or does it apply across, are we going to consume information to all of them, or is it only the first presentation of the legal?
Honorable Mahaula, the legal advisor is only outlining the process that we should follow as parliament. She is not going to give any legal opinion today. There will be no legal opinion. So we have nothing to engage on because the process that she would outline the process is such a reminder of the procedure that we have been told that this is the process. So there is nothing that we are going to engage on. Because we can only engage after a committee we have taken a decision as to how do we want to deal with the bill. And then she or he can bring an opinion. It will be only then that we will be in a position to comment. Because we are saying nothing. Our opinion as well on the bill, we have not discussed it. We can't talk about it because we have to sit down. We have to listen. That the procedure must listen to all this process. And then we sit down. And then we decide how to move forward with the bill. That's what we have done with the amendment as well. That's the process. There's nothing that is invented, but that is the process that we have to follow. You will have time to engage, but not today. So we are just following the process as it is outlined for us to deal with the budget members' fees. I think you are with me.
That's fine, sir.
Okay. Members, any other things else in the agenda? Then we are left. Are you ready? Or the adoption members? Seems like there's nothing here. The adoption of the program. Van Salve, honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to move the adoption of the agenda.
The adoption has been moved. Another debacle, let's step on the agenda. I mean the moving of the adoption. So the adoption, agenda has been adopted. Now, what we are left with is to hear from both the Department of Labor and the Department of Home Affairs. And as you are seated here, I don't know who is who. So I think we must be, the Department of Labor must tell us who is here, and the Department of Home Affairs must also tell us who is here. And anyone between the two, I think the Department of Home Affairs must lead us on this presentation today, because we want to understand how they work. And this is, oh sorry, I can see the eyes, next to me. I've made a mistake, but let me finish so that when she is done, I don't have to explain. That we looked through that, we went to visit the mines in Mpumalanga, in farms in Mpumalanga. And we have realized that there are lots, there are farms that most of workers that are there are farm workers. I mean, people who are coming from the neighboring countries, more especially from Mozambique. And most of them, the permits expired. And when they explain how they get the right permits, there was a story that we could not understand. But the fact that the farms were more flooded by the people who are outside, who are from outside, that was a concern, because the work that is done in the farm is not as skilled. Now we need to understand then the problems and how does it happen that you have an army or a battalion of workers who are coming from the neighboring countries who are flooding farms, who are there without permits, some for years. And we sat in those farms where they were in majority. The farm bosses really did not want us to interact with them. We had difficult time, yes, it was so difficult. Now that work is work that is in both department shoulders in terms of how do they get in, how do they get in, how do they manage to stay here for years, and how do we allow that our farms are flooded by people outside when the skills that is used in farms is available in the country. So whoever, because I think before you came here you were briefed to what is that, so want to know your role and your predicament, where you come in and where you stand, and maybe we like you to visit and check, because some of the, I think the Home Affairs, it is easy for them to go in and check who is here legally, who is not legally, because it is their responsibility there in the borders. I think we understand each other. But now, let me give to the legal advisor, and then to the department, and then Madani, and immediately either of the two departments will just show me and talk to us. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. I'm Deva Schwartz. I'm from Parliament Legal Services in the Legislative Drafting Unit. Our office is private legal with the drafting of legislation. They tell us what they want to do and the policy behind it, and we make sure it's in the format of a bill. So our office don't promote any policy or any decision behind having a bill. We give legal assistance and drafting assistance to private members. In that matter, I assisted a member with the drafting of this bill. The purpose today is to just explain, because the issue of private members bill is fairly new to Parliament, and so the purpose of today is just to explain to members what the process involved is, both prior to the bill coming to the committee, as well as since it's now in the committee, our committee must process it. And this process is set out in the rules of Parliament. The presentation, unfortunately, doesn't want to open, but I believe that the presentation was circulated to members beforehand, so I'll be working from the presentation. It is this document, it was read in front. It's a presentation to the BC on labor, legislative processing of a private member's bill. So just by way of introduction, I just want to say that the rules of guide, the process of private member's bills is it's called the interim measures for introduction and consideration of private members' bills. Now, this rules were were in the sentence in the ICC on 20th of November 2012. The rules were thwarted after the Constitutional Court judgment of Ambrosini, where the issue that was challenged was the fact that the rules required other members to go to the Speaker to request for permission in order to introduce a private member's bill. And the court said that is, in terms of the constitution, the members don't need the permission from the Speaker, so the new rules were then drafted. At the moment, the rules were found just after, in the National Assembly rules, just after Rule 233, it doesn't have a number, but it's inserted there in this booklet. The authority of a private member to introduce derives from Constitution in Section 73. And basically it says that a member of the National Assembly can introduce a bill, but only put one qualification there of bills that the member may not introduce. And those are the bills that are listed in Section 214 of the Constitution. Those are mainly your money bills. And then the rules further in give another limitation for a private member. It says that if there is a bill of a similar substance which was used previously in that annual session, then that member may be prevented from introducing the bill. So those are the only two limitations that are in place. Otherwise, the member can introduce any bill in Parliament. Just the pre-introduction statute, otherwise what the member has to do in order to get the bill before Parliament. The rules require that the bill must comply with all the formal requirements. In other words, it must have your, must in the format of a bill, must have a memo and a specific issue. And those requirements are set out in Rule 2, 137 and 241. And if it is a bill that was in the Constitution, that bill must comply with the formal requirements set out in Rule 258. What this is that the member must publish an explanatory memo of the bill or the bill to be introduced in the government committee. The publication may contain an invitation to the public to comment on the bill, and those comments must be submitted to the Secretary of Parliament. And then it also says who's liable for the cost of that publication, and that's the Secretary of Parliament. So instead of this bill, those are the formalities that have already been complied with, and then at this stage. Thereafter, only once the member has done that, can the member come to the House to introduce the bill. Once, at the discussion stage, the member must then give a copy of the bill, or if the bill is to be published in the government gazette, a copy of the government gazette, the bill that was in the government gazette, a copy of the explanatory memo, if the bill was not published, and a supporting memorandum which must explain the objects of the bill, must give an account of the expected financial implications for the state, and state the proposed classification of the bill. In other words, the formal memorandum of objects that usually accompanies the bill. The introduction of the bill is then published in the ACC, and then after this, it is convened that the bill has been introduced in the House. Thereafter, the House then refers it to the committee for consideration, which is where we are today. The bill was referred to the committee. So my next slide deals with how the committee must consider the bill. Now the interim measures provide that the committee must provide firstly reasonable notice to the member in charge of the bill before it considers the legislation, and after due deliberation considers a motion of desirability on the subject matter of the bill. Now the reasonable notice is usually for the member, so that the member has sufficient time to prepare to come to the committee to brief the bill, to brief the committee on the bill. Committee's initial consideration of the private member's bill is intended to be on the principle or subject of the bill. In other words, is the bill desirable? Not on every specific detail of the bill. That is only done after the committee decided on whether they want to proceed with the bill. But initially, it's just on the principle whether the bill is desirable, at this stage. So, the rules talk about due deliberation, but the rule doesn't give us really guidance on what due deliberation is. Now, what we have done is to look at past practices of private notice bills that were before the committee, and based on that, I've formulated a guidance to the committee as to how to go about considering it. Firstly, it would be expected of the committee to allow the member responsible for the bill an opportunity to explain and moderate the legislation. This could, for example, include details of stakeholders consulted in the preparation of the bill, a summary of the public responses to be published to the first bill, an explanation of the anticipated cost of the bill to the state. This practice would also require the committee to facilitate engagement with the relevant department or agency on the need for and practicality of the bill. It might be the government intends introducing similar legislation in the near future, or a policy direction may be very different from the policy of government. In other words, it's in order for the committee to form its decision to have the bill. The department is going to be responsible for the bill after the, if the, the committee should decide to proceed with it, especially how their views are, because the bill may or may not fit into their policy or the way they work, so especially feedback from them as well. The committee may also decide to have public hearings for those who have made submissions on the bill when it was initially published in the Government Gazette, may at the same time invite any other interested party to make a submission. When the bill was published in the Government Gazette, there was a call for public submissions, and those were going to be sent to the Second Parliament. The Second Parliament then usually sent it to the committee. So in order to formulate its view, it may also get, if the committee wants to ask those individuals to brief the committee on their views expressed on, or the comment expressed at that stage. Further guidance on what to take into account when considering the desirability of the bill can be taken from the previous Rule 35A of the 7th edition of the rules. I must at this stage say that it considers that the Constitutional Court case in Ambrosini versus the Speaker of the National Assembly declared this rule constitutionally invalid and severed in its entirety. However, the court did say the following, that the rule that it declared invalid was only, it declared only meaningless because it had its existence attached to a rule that followed above, and that rule the court declared invalid. In other words, the court said the fact that I have to declare this rule invalid because it's consequential because of a previous rule, but the court didn't at that stage. It should be understood that this is a pronouncement on constitutionality of it. So it is my view that the guidance that was set up in the previous rules can still be applied by the higher committee because the court didn't make a pronouncement on it. Previously the rules were much more clearer as to what the committee can take into consideration when it, is, it considers its motion of desirability. So it's my view the committee can still take that into consideration. And what that previous rule said was that the committee could decide in whether the bill goes against the spirit and purpose of the purpose and object of the Constitution, seeks to initiate legislation beyond the legislative competence of the Assembly, duplicates any existing legislation and is awaiting consideration by the Assembly or Council, preempts similar legislation similar to be introduced in the, by the National Executive, or result in a money bill, or is frivolous or vexatious. So those were the factors that was previously taken into account. So these are all things that the committee may consider when decides. Once the committee has now decided whether it wants to proceed with the bill, it has to then take a position and then has to proceed to the motion of desirability. If the motion of desirability is rejected, in other words, the committee feels that it doesn't want the bill, the committee must then report to the House and table the report. if the committee decides, yes, we want to have the ball, it will then proceed with the ball like any other ball. In other words, it will then call for wider public engagement, and then ensure that every clause of the ball, to see whether it is exactly what the committee wants. And then once that is done, the committee will then report with the ball, on the ball, to the House. So that's basically the process. Thank you, Chief.
The process has been aligned to life. Any clarity that you want to understand from the process?
None.
Thank you very much. Ms. Schwartz will give over to the Department of Labor.
To respond. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. Maybe if I can just start off by apologizing on behalf of the Director General. He did ask that I lead the delegation, and Director General acknowledged. You also wanted to know who is present. Now there are three groups that I brought along. The first one is dealing with the PAC members' bill, which is led by Mr. Cecil Sifield and Mr. Tim Gosim Kalibi as the negotiators at NEDLAC, but they are also accompanied by officials from the Unemployment Insurance Fund. Let me also apologize on behalf of the Commissioner Suru, but Mr. Kapuzi, who is the CFO, Ms. Yuda Msongo, who is the Corporate Services Chief Director, Ms. Mungonya, who is also the Lab Chief, Director. If you can realize, are also here as part of the deliberations on the private members' bill as it affects their aid. Now, the other team that is with me are going to be part of the discussion on the Department of Labor's role in migration. And from the Department of Labor side, led by myself, Sam Rotova, where the migration issue resides, I also have the Chief Director, Ms. Puan, who's responsible for migration. And we also brought in Ms. Dolly Chima, because we did take note of the concerns that Honorable Members has with regard to the inspection that was conducted in her area. We thought that it would be important that if there are issues relating to that, she should be here. And we also have, I think, Ms. Matabu from the DG's office and the two colleagues from the Minister's office that do not require any further introduction to yourself, Mr. Nkemba and Mr. Zima. And we also have colleagues from Home Affairs who are going to introduce themselves, led by Mr. Muliru, the Chief Director in the Department. And Mr. Mkalipi will then respond to the bill as proposed from the Department. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moroto. The lady who is part of the delegation, can you move over to the side, please? And over to you, Mr. Moroto.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honorable Members. This deal was presented at NELEC by the African Christian Democratic Party in terms of Section 33 of the Constitution. And also the member comply with the NEDLAC Act, which requires that NEDLAC deal with all labor, all proposed labor legislation relating to labor market policy. The deal proposed is to amend the Basic Conditions of Employment Act to provide for parental leave, 10 consecutive days parental leave when a child is born and when a child is adopted. And the deal further proposes an adoption leave, 10 consecutive weeks adoption leave, or 10 days parental leave on adoption of the child, if the adoption order is made in respect of two adoptive parents. The bill further proposes commissioning parental leave for 10 consecutive weeks or 10 days parental leave on the day the child is born as a result of a surrogate motherhood or agreement. The proposed amendment will seek, as we indicated, to provide parental leave adoption to the commission parental leave, as well as for payment from the Unemployment Insurance Fund in terms of parental commission for parental leave. Previously, the Basic Condition of Employment Act provides for maternity leave on a paid basis, with the payment being made from the unemployment insurance, from the employee's credit in the unemployment insurance. The second provision is the Basic Condition of Employment Act. The Basic Condition of Employment Act provides for what we term family responsibility leave. This family responsibility leave is for full-time employees, that is the 2 days maternity leave, family responsibility. When a child is born, if your child is born, you can take 3 days family responsibility. If your child is sick, you can take 2 days. If you are a father, you can use it as paternity leave. It can be taken by a spouse, life partner, a parent, adoptive parent, grandparent, children, and siblings. The BCA system does not make provision for adoption leave or commission parental leave, nor does it make provision for paternity leave. In the network process in 2001, when we were amending the Unemployment Insurance Act, the one that the committee passed, I think, 2 weeks, 2 weeks ago, the issue of maternity day leave and adoption of full attributable benefit from the Employment Insurance Fund were raised. Now, members, there's a judgment in the labor court, in the different labor court, that was given against the teacher for refusing to grant a gay man 4 months maternity leave on the basis that he is not a biological mother of child. And the court found that that was an unfair discrimination to refuse maternity leave to gay men who became parents through surrogacy. I mean, raising this issue, the court, said that this approach not giving this right ignores the fact that the right to maternity leave in the Basic Condition of Employment Act in the current circumstances of not being solely on the welfare of the child's mother, but also take the best interest of the child into account. The court in our opinion therefore has dealt with the issue of surrogacy, because it's a court decision that says that if you surrogate mother, you don't have to be the biological mother of the child. The court has extended the rights that are in the BCA and that are in the YF to surrogate mothers and to gay people in terms of this case. We think that one of the areas that the bill want to address, the court has been already addressed by the court. And the only challenge that was left with us at NEDLE then was the issue of paternity leave. How do we deal with the issue of giving paternity leave in terms of this? The bill network was dealt with in 3 meetings. We met on the 15th of May, and we met on the 25th and 27th of January this year. The member that proposed the president number bill was invited into the deliberation. He attended the deliberation at NEDLEC to brief the network partners on the bill itself. Initially, there was confusion at NEDLEC on how to deal with this, because normally at NEDLEC, NEDLEC deal with public intervention of government. It's the government that put a proposal, and that's what debated, and there was a confusion in terms of how do we deal with a private member bill, because it's not put but our discussion in Menko, in Menko Management Committee, it was agreed that we should continue to deal with this bill and keep a rate on it next week. In the network process, the UIF amendment that were dealt with NetNet, it was agreed that we've got to give, I mean, the intention was that after 18 months, we were to come back to NetNet constituency, relook the issues that were not finalized in NetNet. And it was agreed that those issues had got to be dealt after 8 months when the NetNet is the one that now in front of Parliament is has been put into place and it's in operation. The issues that were left was the issue of reservation, because there was a big demand. As you members would know, the law presently, you don't get paid. If you are unemployed as a result of you resigning, you don't get paid. You get paid UI if you are dismissed, if you are absconded, or if you are retrenched. You are retrenched, you get paid. But if you resign, and the issue about this is trying to avoid the unintended consequences of resignation. The idea was that people know that they are going to resign, they will resign just to get the money instead of continuing with the work. But there was a big demand during the negotiation to deal with that issue. The other issue that we needed to deal with was the fixed term and seasonal contracts, informal employment, those people who are employed, who are self-employed, and the people who are self-employed, the people who are selling fruits and vegetables, who are not normally employed by employers, but they are employing themselves. There is a big demand that the UI should cater for that. How should cater for that as an issue that we still going to create in, as we said, in 18 months after the amendments that are now in front of Parliament have been put in operation. The next issue that we needed to consider is the issue of alignment between UI and the comprehensive social security policies that government is intending to introduce, so that they talk to each other. The issue of inclusion of asylum seekers into the UIF also was an issue. How do we include them and into those who are employed and make sure that we can benefit out of the process? And the last issue that NetLeg still has got to deal with is the issue of short time. Presently, if you bring economic difficulties, if employers put people on short time, they are not dismissed technically, they are short time. And in the legislation in UIF before 1994, there was a provision that if workers were short time, you could claim unemployment insurance for that period that you are unemployed. But in the new legislation, that issue was taken out of the legislation. Now there's a proposal that we need to relook on that issue. Those are the issues that NetLeg intends to take forward at that time. As a result of that, of that engagement, the Commission and UIF now, they are busy with an affordability study to look on those issues, because anything, when amending the UIF, you've got to make sure that the UIF is able to fund those changes that we're going to make. And also, with the changes that are going to come now, we are worried that if no change comes and don't see, we don't wait and see how this affects the fund and the reserve of the fund and introduce immediately other changes, the chances are that we might affect the fund negatively. We just worry about that. But in principle, it's never, there's no principle disagreement in dealing with these issues pending the affordability in terms of the fund. Next, please. Now, the issues proposed by the members, private members, have been referred with these issues of NetLeg to the UI is now, the Commission is busy with an actuarial evaluation to check the cost effect of these issues on the fund. The application of commission for parental benefit is going to be one of those issues. The payment of commission for parental benefit is going to be one of those issues. The parental leave and payment benefit and payment adoption, all those issues are going to be part of the package. The other issue that we want to raise is that members know that admittedly who are busy now with the discussion on minimum wage, who are busy with the discussion on the stability of the labor market. Now, those two discussions are going to necessitate an amendment to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, to the Labor Relations Act, very soon, when the agreement is reached. Now, the view of NEDLEC is that it might not be desirable to amend, because even this present member bill would require an amendment to the CDA to cater for it, and the view is that when we do an amendment, we could do a holistic amendment and include all of these issues in terms of that discussion. Therefore, when the amendment for minimum wage comes in, they've got to deal with the amendment dealing with these issues and the other issues coming in. When the amendment, when the UN has look on the feasibility of the amendments that NEDLEC is proposing and the private member bill is proposing, and we're sure what are the cost implications, and we bring those three legislations, it will be the UI again, it will be the UID, it will be LRA, it will be the Basic Consumer Employment Act dealing with all of the issues. That's what has been agreed at NEDLEC by all constituencies. And as I've said, members, there's no principal objections on all of the issues, including the issues that are in the private members' bill, the issues about the affordability of those issues and the timing, when do you make the proposal, because to make proposal on the PCA now and then make other proposals 2 months down the line when we finalize the minimum wage negotiations at NEDLEC, it will seem a little bit cumbersome. That's our presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Mukalipu. Any clarity on what's been the clarity on the presentation? Honorable Fahim?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for giving me this opportunity. Ms. Mukalipu, I have a slight worry in that you're saying you'd like to discuss it all together and then do a composite, which is obviously the opportune thing to do, the correct thing, so that we don't keep rushing to Parliament and then getting changes done. But from my understanding is we're still a long way away off on the assessment of the minimum wage and what it will be and who will determine it, and all those debates can take years. Unless you're telling me that you have some sort of sunset clause in mind, then maybe you could share that with us.
I think that's Honorable Bachner. Whether we want to follow the route that the NEDLEC has presented in terms of dealing with this bill, or we want to take another route as the committee, it's something that we have to decide upon. So it's not something that we must discuss today. As I've said earlier on, as we meet with the committee, fortunately, NEDLEC is telling us what they are thinking and their view on this private members. Now, it's on our shoulders as Parliament to sit down and say, do we agree or do we want this bill? If we want this bill, we have a way of going through. Because as committee, we haven't said anything, whether we want to, desirable or not. So those are things that we will discuss as the committee. So I will suggest that at this stage, let's keep all what has been said in mind and then sit down. They will be here and I think we've gone through all the processes, including the processes that have been applied by our legal advisor. We called the member. The submissions indeed have been sent to the Parliament, and they are with us, and I believe that the Committee Secretary has given them to us. So at this stage, we are on the right track. The question is not wrong, but the question is, let's discuss and find the way forward. Because if you're asking him now, it's like we have said, we want it, but we don't want this process. But let's take that decision as a committee. What is that we want? Which route do we want? Do we want to wait for NEDLEC? we want to just build it? Do we want to build? We are not satisfied. You want to be something else, Honorable Bakri. I've noted your hand, Honorable Bakri, something. Or was it offered? Honorable Bakri.
Thank you. I know that we haven't made a decision yet. I know that we're going to make a decision at some stage. That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking for what is the current thinking of Nedlac and what is the partner thinking. That's why he's here to tell us. He's here to tell us what they're thinking. And what are they thinking in terms of timing? Because that might somehow influence some of our thinking. If they believe that the timing is ripe for X, Y, and Z, then maybe that would influence some of our debates. And that's all I'm asking him. He came here to tell us that their thinking is it should be debated together or proposed together. What I'm asking is when. And that's all I'm asking. I'm asking his thinking. I'm not asking him to tell us what to do. I'm asking him to tell us what his thinking is.
No, Bafayim, I think I heard exactly what you're saying. And I think Mr. Mkhalipi did say he has put in front of us what is that they want to do as magic. Yes, but the timing I don't think that is important to us now. Not now. It will be important when the parliament, when the committee takes decision. Not now. It has been presented to us, but we still have to sit down and decide the way forward. And in that way forward, if we say we want to take the route that the network is telling us about, then we will come back and say, well, we can decide, but I don't think the time. We also know, we know where the process is in network. In all these issues that are raised, if we are not aware, we can say that, but I think we are there. So what Mr. Mkhalipi on behalf of network is saying is not going to influence the decision. So whether that is in 2 months' time or in 2 weeks, I don't think it's something that we have to decide now. I think the community must decide its route first and put all these things that have been put in front of us and see how we go forward.
Honorable Lolliwa. Thanks, Chair. I want to agree with you that there are processes that have to follow in dealing with this particular matter. And I think the onus is on the committee to say we have managed to go over this particular step, then for the following step will be ready at this particular time. So I think we have given ourselves enough time to deal with the matter. But I also want to reiterate that we all understand that in terms of the program of Parliament, we will be here until the 27th of May. Then it means as a committee, because we have already adopted a program, we must then look at the program and where to fit in this particular matter. Thank you.
We pass on this matter. Are you fine? So thank you so much, you are late. And now we get to issues of education. Thank you. what we can begin inform the other people.
Good morning, Jesus. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson and honorable members, my name is Mudevi Matthews. I'm the Chief Director for Immigration and Sacred. I'm standing in for our Deputy Director General of Immigration Services, who's currently on annual leave, so I apologize on his behalf. I'm accompanied by Mr. Ronnie Marula, who's seated next to me on the right here. He's the Acting Chief Director for Permits and Visas. And then I've the Director for Corporate Permits, Mr. Pindu Mbele. Then followed along the line is then Mr. Riaz Musa, also our Parliamentary Liaison Officer. And then we have Mr. Sam Mandiwan in the Ministry. Dear President, we are going to talk to our mandate as Department of Home Affairs in terms of the Immigration Act, as well as the relevant legislative prescripts that govern the areas of work permits, corporate permits, and what is normally referred to as the temporary visas for purposes of work. As is indicated in the slide, we are mandated by the Immigration Act. That governs how immigration is performed in the Republic of South Africa by foreigners, residents into the country, the entry into the country, residence, and their departure from the Republic, and matters connected therewith. Matters connected there would be the issues such as deportation, those who are here unlawfully, as well as the issues relating to how a refugee may move over to the immigration regime if they're here permanently. The Immigration Act provides for the following categories of temporary residence visas: study, treaty, business, crew visas, medical treatment visas, relatives, work, retired persons, exchange permits, as well as asylum permits as well. The issue of permanent residence permits, that entails that a foreigner who is entitled to reside in South Africa on a permanent basis with all rights, responsibilities, and obligations of a South African citizen, except the right to vote. So a person who is given permanent residence, they can remain here permanently, do everything, apply for all manner of jobs, but they don't have the right to vote in elections or use a South African passport. Our legislative framework, governed by the Constitution, the Immigration Act, then the related regulations, as well as the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. If we go to the Immigration Act, the preamble talks to the issues we've alluded to, the residence, in the departure, etc. But it also guides in terms of how we implement immigration control. It ensures that interdepartmental coordination and public consultations are done in order to enrich the management of immigration. It also ensures that economic growth is promoted through the employment of needed foreign labor. Foreign investment is facilitated, the entry of exceptionally skilled or qualified people is enabled. Also, skilled human resources are increased, there's academic exchanges within the Southern African development community, as well as promotion of tourism. The preamble also talks to the contribution of foreign nationals in the South African labor market being conducted in a manner that doesn't adversely impact on existing labor standards and the rights and expectations of South African workers. In terms of the framework, if for a corporate permit, and that is where a corporate would require a number of employees to come and work in their particular corporate, there is a consultation process that takes place with the Department of Labor and the Department of Trade and Industry. After that consultation, the Director General of Home Affairs determines the maximum number of foreigners to be employed in terms of a corporate permit by a corporate applicant. The Minister as well may, after consultation with the Minister of Trade and Industry and all minerals and energy or agriculture, or as the case may be, the Minister of Labor designate certain industries or segments, therefore, in respect of which the government may reduce or waive the requirements of subsection 2, that is the consultation process. In addition to this, the representations made by a corporate applicant in respect of the needs of employed foreigners, the job descriptions, number of citizens or permanent residents employed in their positions, and other prescribed matters must also be forwarded in when they make representations for the need for corporate applicants. In terms of applying for a general work permit, an application for a general work permit must be accompanied by a certificate from the Department of Labor or access from the database of a salary benchmarking the organization stipulating the average salary earned by the employees occupying similar positions in the Republic. Also, just to add to this, an application for a general work permit must indicate that there has been a diligent search for someone, a local permanent, which has resulted in nobody local being able to fill the post, therefore the need for a foreign national to occupy a particular position. In terms of work visa categories, we have corporate visa, a general work visa, and a business visa as well. As indicated in on slide 5, the application for a corporate visa needs to be accompanied by proof of the need to employ the requested number of foreign nationals. So a person cannot get a number of employees and believe that they will get that number from labor from a neighboring country. That is the type of proof that would be required. Then there is a certificate from the Department of Labor confirming that despite diligent search, the corporate applicant was unable to find suitable citizens or permanent residents to occupy the position. They would also need to confirm the job description and propose remuneration in respect of each foreigner. So it shouldn't come to a point where the corporate applicant would show that no, they will reduce the salary. It still needs to be on par with what they would have paid somebody, a local person, but not a justification to say, well, because it's foreign national, let's pay at a lower rate. So that needs to be also included. As I've already alluded to that in point 3, so we can move on. The amendments to the Immigration Act, which were done in 2011. Immigration Act talks to the Director General determining in consultation with prescribed departments, I've already alluded to, the maximum number of foreigners to be employed in terms of a corporate visa. I've also alluded to the roles of the Department of Trade and Industry and the Department of Labor, so we can move on. Again, on slide 9, a general work visa talks to a similar issue of the Department of Labor providing a certificate confirming the unavailability of a local person to fill a particular position. Also confirmation that the applicant has the qualifications for proven skills and experience in line with the job offer. That the salary and benefits would not be inferior to the average salary and benefits of citizens or permanent residence holders. And that the contract of employment stipulating the conditions of employment signed by both employer and applicant is in line with labor standards in the Republic and is made conditional upon a general work visa be approved. So the process, the Department of Labor would forward the certificate to Home Affairs. The applicants would, when they submit their visa application, would actually reconcile to what the Department of Labor has indicated in terms of the in terms of the certificate they issue, and it will also be, allow us to then adjudicate on the particular work visa by saying no, it complies with the standards of labour. It can also be a condition of us refusing to issue the visa to say that the Department of Labour maybe not do not agree that there is the diligent search has been conducted. They believe that there are people who in the country a sufficient number who could do that particular. That particular employment or have the necessary skills, but it wasn't a need or a person to go outside of the country to find a particular skill. In terms of business visas, those are those who come into the country to establish a business. There needs to be proof. It's terms of our legislation, that at least 60% of the total staff complement employed in the operations of the business are South African citizens or permanent residents employed permanently in the various positions. So we're talking of the operations of the business, so those actually have a role in terms of the core business of that particular undertaking. So when a business can't say, well, I've employed about 60% of the staff complement are cleaners or gardeners, therefore I have complied. It talks specifically to did that actually make it a viable business. An application for a business visa by a foreigner who intends to establish a business and invest in a business that is not yet established in the Republic shall be accompanied by an undertaking by the applicant that at least 50% of the staff complement to be employed in the business shall be South African citizens or PITR holders, and proof of compliance with this undertaking shall be submitted within 12 months of issuance of the visa. So there's an obligation on the business within 12 months to provide records to show that there is at least 60% of the staff complement being South African nationals. In terms of the Department of Trade and Industry's responsibilities in the Immigration Act and its amendments, a corporate visa an application or corporate visa needs to show proof of registration with the South African Revenue Service, the Unemployment Insurance Fund, Compensation Fund for Occupational Injuries and Diseases, the CIPC registration where legally required, and then of course the 60% total staff complement, and at any time during the duration of the visa provide proof of the 60% compliance of total staff complement being South African nationals. Again, the DTI's responsibilities in terms of the business visas, it's similar. It's a requirement that a letter of recommendation must come from the DTI regarding the feasibility of the business, the contribution to the national interest of the Republic. The national interest would talk to a business. It actually distinguishes between a business, someone coming in to establish a fast food restaurant may not necessarily be considered in the national interest because there are many. But the national interest could be something that is actually going to have a contribute big to major infrastructural development or other areas such as that have an impact on the development and economic improvement and welfare of the country. There needs to be registration with the South African Revenue Service, the Employment Insurance Fund, Compensation Fund for Occupational Injuries and Diseases, and also the CIPC. Also, financial statements in respect of the business and proof of investment as well. In terms of the present application management system, the Department of Home Affairs is contracted with the Visa Facilitation Services, what's referred to as VFS. They are applicants either go to the VFS if they're in country in South Africa, or they go to our foreign missions to apply for visa. Where we're not represented in a foreign country abroad, the application must be submitted at the designated South African diplomatic or consular service, which could be a neighbouring country, but there are processes for that. Again, permanent residence permits must be lodged in the either in a mission or VFS offices. If we have a VFS office in foreign countries in our that are contracted to us in some of our some of the foreign countries that we contracted VFS to operate from, such as in Nigeria, London, India, similar process. The applicants need to submit the visa applications to those places. If the application is done in country, an application will only be accepted if the person is DPU resident in South Africa. So if they don't have status in South Africa, they can't actually lodge an application. They're actually illegally in South Africa, and we either give them an order to leave or we support such persons. Applicants, in the new regulations, we do not allow somebody to submit a visa application on behalf of someone else. It was allowed in the past where you would have an immigration agent coming to the department with documentation and submitting an application on behalf of a person. The new regulations provide for applicants appearing in person and having their biometrics taken. This is also for security reasons. If it was done, a person could there was a lot of fraud and corruption in terms of the old process, but this process of actually having applicants appear in front at the local VFS offices has minimized the likelihood of any occurrences of fraud or any other transgressions occurring. The process in regard to the DTI, Department of Labor, we anticipate it should take more than 30 days for the DTI process and Department of Labor processes before applications are submitted to the department. What turns out is the DTI or Department of Labor will indicate to an applicant that their certificate has been submitted to the Department of Home Affairs. Then applicant makes the application for visa. So the process is a person goes to either of those departments to verify they would like corporate to bring in corporate workers, or they are work permit applicants, and this is the type of undertaking they are and the type of work that will be done. They make that application to either of those two departments. They inform that fine, the matter has been considered, it's in reference to Home Affairs, applicant then it's the application for Department of for the relevant visa. On page 15, we just talked to a typical application for corporate visa. We outlined a few pressure points at the bottom, which relate to the capacity to handle volumes of applications, and concerns with the standard operating procedures, issues regarding inadequately trained officials, turnaround times. These are just some of the challenges we face, and they're some of the challenges within the department that we are continually seeking to improve on. At page 17, we are just outlining the visa application centres, the VFS offices that we have in the country. We currently have 7 visa application centres. We also have a specific office for corporate clients, which was opened last year in Staten. We also are intending to open two new offices for corporate applicants. But we have 11 centres where applications for visas can be lodged in each of the provinces currently. So we close with on the last slide where we just talked to the recommendation process, which is it's just a summary of the process. So the DTI and Department of Labor making recommendations to the DG of Home Affairs. We seek to limit the frequency of interaction by an applicant with the departments, develop and put in place systems to manage the processing of recommendations, development of new SOPs aligned to processes within the DTI, Department of Labor and Home Affairs, and then to also identify, prevent, and eliminate potential risks such as corruption and fraudulent documents, consider using face value certificates with serial numbers that can be audited. These are just some of the processes which we say simplify processes but also strengthen them. Before we close, maybe just to talk to the issue that the chair raised in terms of the people coming in from neighboring countries. I think we have, in terms of our land border, we are talking of, we have at least over 4,000 kilometers of land border, which is extensive, with possibly of six or thereabout neighboring countries, with a lot of nationals in those neighboring countries, the economic migrants mainly, coming to work in Ndansa for a number of years. We also have an inspectorate unit which does inspection to see that people are doing inspections at factories, farms, businesses, to ensure that people who are here on a lawful basis. If they're not, we detain, we prosecute employers as well. So those processes are in place for dealing with those who come in. But we do have an extensive, very extensive borderline, and it's not police at every single step. There are people who choose to come in clandestinely, and that's why we have an inspectorate unit to deal with those people come in, and also then leads to the number of persons that are deported, and majority are deported to neighboring countries. Chairperson, that's our presentation. I thank you.
Thank you so much. Guys, members, I don't know whether you would want to ask questions on the reports that are in front of us using your experiences, or we wait for the Department of Labor to say something and then check and then ask questions, guidance. That are good.
So, I would request that we pose questions to the last presentation before the department can come.
There's a proposal that questions must be posed now, and if we have a hand, then the questions. Honorable Bakri.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of questions. Thank you. First of all, I think this report was absolutely superb. It's opened my eyes, and I'm sure a lot of committee now understand fully how it's done. It's been difficult for us to get an overview, and this is good. So thank you for that. It really is important. One thing I did note in a few things, in slide 4, you talk about economic growth is promoted through the employment of elite foreign labour. And my experience has been, my constituency, that's absolutely correct. The reports I have had, maybe you can comment on it, is that each time foreign labourer with a certain skills is brought in, it creates 4 to 5 local jobs. And I don't know if that's something that you've experienced in your assessment of it. And that's why it's important for us to have a look at what the Department of Labour has suggested and where you go from there. The other thing is in slide 7, there's an issue by saying that when you bring in a foreigner, you obviously can't pay them less because you've now got some sort of, create some sort of benefit. In other words, bring a foreigner in, pay them less than a local. But I think it works the other way around as well. Our labour legislation, I think, tend to be corrected, is that you can't pay them higher than a local for providing the same service. And I presume that's within the remit of that as well. Maybe you could comment on it. I mean, it would be egregious to pay someone higher when they're doing exactly the same job as a South African. If you go to slide 9, where you're saying in slide 9 is general work visa points A4, Roman numerals 4, the contract of employment stipulating the conditions, and it's conditional upon the general work visa being approved. My understanding is that once you've given someone a letter of appointment, and it will have to be somehow compared to the Labour Relations Act, once you've given them a letter of appointment as a job applicant, if they feel they've been treated unfairly, they still have an application to approach for unfair dismissal even before they've started. And this conditional upon the work visa might have to be tested I think we need to have a look at that as well. When you look at slide 10, it says we were talking about 60% of the total staff complement employed in the operations. I presume that's total staff complement employed in the operation there in South Africa, because obviously a lot of those businesses have branches in South Africa. And I presume you're saying it's in South Africa over here as opposed to of the business itself. I'm sure you mean that, but it doesn't say that. Slide 12, the contribution of national interest in the Republic. Now that's very wide, because national interest, in my mind, and the most important thing at the moment in this country, is job creation. And that is a national interest. But it's job creation for South Africans, as opposed to foreigners. And so therefore, we would have to prove that that's providing a job to a foreigner will concomitantly relate to jobs for locals, extra jobs for locals. And then I presume that could be national interest. But maybe you could comment on that as well. And finally, and I'm happy with the present recommendation process of page 14, but I'm led to believe, and I'm not sure, that in fact DHA still have the final say as opposed to the Department of Labor. And if the Department of Labor looks at it and says, we believe that you should be able to employ this foreigner because he or she has this particular skill and it will lead to 5 other jobs, do you second guess them? And if you do second guess them, do you give reasons for that? In other words, can you override the Department of Labor's proposals? Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Honourable Buckley. Honourable Mandasha. Noted. Honourable Fonsabe.
Thank you, Chair. I have a few questions. After this presentation by the Department of Home Affairs, I asked myself this question. When we visited Mpumalanga, we found a handful of workers, I mean, of migrant workers, who says they, before they grant them permits to come into South Africa, they make they verify many things as you present. They've done that to those people. Do they have work contracts in the country they're working in? Why is it that they replace South Africans in those farms? And for me, the work of a general farm worker is not a scarce skill. Why did you allow them to come into the country? Lastly, have you looked into the compliance of their employers to the BCA before you granted them permits to come in? Why did you outsource some of your day-to-day to work to VFS? Have you looked into the amount of money that VFS charge people who apply for visas? Monitoring them. What are the people who were previously doing the work of the VA, VFS, doing in your offices currently? Thank you so
much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I actually want to appreciate also that the presentation. It is indeed eye-opening and informative. But when we look at slide 5, we see that they are speaking about the DG that shall determine the number of foreigners to be employed. So my question is there is a determination in terms of the maximum employees that needs to be employed? Do you at any stage have a monitoring mechanism
in terms of ensuring that it doesn't exceed that maximum? Or how are you doing this thing in terms of establishing that you've reached the required amount and it's enough, or how are you going about this? When looking at the diligent search and comparing what you are saying in terms of the law to what we experienced on those farms, we are talking about people who doesn't have skills and people who don't need skills to be employed. So are you also applying the diligent search in terms of the known and low-skilled workers? Then looking at 60% compliance of staff that needs to be employed, South African people that needs to be employed, do you also have a monitoring mechanism in terms of those companies, especially neighboring our foreign countries like Botswana? Do you have a monitoring system in terms to establish that indeed they are complying, the employees are complying with that 60% target? After granting the permit, because that I think is the crux of what we established, majority of those people, as per in the information that we've received from employees, majority of those employees at some stage had valid permits. But then it expired, and as they told us, after that they struggled to extend the permit or to get permission to do further employment. As a result, some of those people, and I'm quoting one of the employees directly, some of those employees are more than 20 years on those farms. So I'm just curious, how are you going about that? When you are renewing permits, or when permits are about to expire, don't you have some way to track that in terms of this specific month, these permits have expired and we're going to track those people? Don't you have something like that to monitor that? Because I think that is the crux of our problem. In terms of the visa application centers on page 17, I'm just curious, when looking at the vastness of some of the provinces, my question is then, how do you identify how many centers serve which province? Because when looking at Gauteng, it's understandable, but when looking yet again at the Northern Cape, that's such a vast province, versus the Western Cape, that has two centers, what is like the criteria that you're using to establish those centers, and what is the plans that you have in place to in future increase maybe that center, or is there a need to increase that center? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Consultant. Honorable Lillywood.
Thanks, Chair. Let me join my colleagues in welcoming the report. Is really an eye-opener. I want to take the question further from some of the questions asked by Honorable Franz Kafwek. When we were in Mpumalanga, we picked up that the majority of employees did not have work permits. And my understanding is that even if Department of Labor can be on the spot picking up that they are illegally there, there's still a process that has to unfold for them to be dealt with by your immigration officers. What then is your plan in dealing with this? Because I view it as a challenge, especially for the workplaces there. The other one is, you issue out permits, and then is there any other mechanism of making a follow-up when they are about to expire, so that you visit some workplaces? Is there a way of tracing where the permit holders went other than your unannounced pressures, because what if your unannounced pressures are pre-order and you know that families expire almost on a daily basis? Can I be given a more simpler interpretation of the slide on page 14? Because if I interpret it arithmetically, it means an application unit. Suppose the application was with DPI, let's say 2 weeks, then it goes to Dawn for 30 days, and it takes about 8 weeks for it to be processed by Home Affairs. Does it mean there's a greater possibility of waiting up to 3 months for one application to be finalized? Or am I misinterpreting what is written there? If I can clarify it. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Taylor. And we'll give you an opportunity. Oh, are you going to have...
Basically, what I want to ask is that bear with me on this one, because what comes out from the comments regarding the farm workers is basically the inspectorate capacity. If you can just respond on the inspectorate capacity. And what brings me also, I may not be privy in farms mostly, but I know that in most vulnerable sectors, that's where you likely to find, not only in farms, that's where you likely to find the fellows being supported because they don't have tenants. And the impression that is given out there to society, the only possible illegal foreigners in the country is our fellows from the neighborhood countries. That is the Zimbabweans, Botswana, and other countries in Africa. And I'm not sure how you respond to me on this one, because I want to check as well, is it true, could it only be the African fellows? Because when you see the immigrant centers, the people that are going to be supported, you only find them. You see, and mostly because they are found easily in vulnerable sectors. Even police, they can easily get them. They just decide to check where's your permit. You don't have a permit, they throw you in. And the impression that is given in South Africa, the only people that are illegal immigrants is those fellows. Now, I want to check from the department. You see, in terms of the separate capacity, because the people from Europe that would be here illegally, you will just not find them in farms. You will obviously not find them in taverns. You will not find them in vulnerable sectors. But the reality is that they are likely to be there. And concerning the inspectorate capacity, what other mechanism where we can find some rich people from Europe that could be here illegally, that might have had their permits expired, but they are still here. But they are just not as black as possible that they don't belong to South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Makaula. Department of Process.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson, and Honorable Members for the questions. I will be assisted in answering with my two colleagues on my right. But I think if I'm allowed to just maybe jump to some of the questions that were asked, if that's allowed.
Give you the space to distribute questions to your delegation, okay. Who's online. Honorable?
Just, I want to add another question before the response. According to the IMF, in the Eastern Cape, there's only one center for applications for visas, and it is in Port Elizabeth. I just want to check if they know how vast that province is for the people who want to apply for this visa to go to Port Elizabeth. Because our borders start from next to KZN up there, and up to East London and on the other end. And if someone who comes from Queenstown travels 400 k's to Port Elizabeth, do you have considered the extent of the cost going to the center that was established? Why is there's one center in the Eastern Cape?
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I'll talk to, I'll start maybe with the issues of VFS. VFS's role is a collection role. So it's not, they don't do the decision making on the visas. There are many centers where a person will do the submission of the application. So they'll go with the application form, the passport, and the whatever, the motivation for the particular permit. For example, like they have been accepted to study at a university for a student visa. So VFS will not make a take. They will merely check that those the documents are correct, that are being submitted, then they will take give the person all the information that's necessary, so confirmation that the person submitted the application and the like, then they'll take the biometric, the photo, then they will courier that to the department. So the role of deciding on whether the person is entitled to the visa is still with the Department of Home Affairs. So those officials that dealt with visas at local offices, they're still employed in the Department of Home Affairs. There was no retrenchment of any officials by going the route of VFS. We are monitoring. We are in regular contact with VFS. Contractors monitor everything. They are part. They're within the department on all these matters. So it's not like it's something we've totally done an outsourcing of a function. Where they have a primary role on what the client actually requires. In terms of the decision in terms of the centres, that was based on the number of applications that we received in particular provinces. So you were found that maybe certain provinces are very, very minimal applications for extensions or visas. Haldane, obviously, being a Western Cape, would have had higher numbers of people who apply for extensions, who apply for visas. Those certain provinces, the volume is very low. You will find that the actual service that the department gives in those provinces would be more aligned to some of our other services, not necessarily the visas. So it was based on that. It was done on an assessment of volumes of applications. There is a period of a number of days before a person would apply for an extension of their visa. And prior to VFS centers opening, we were not doing visas in a number of offices. It would be in key offices. So there hasn't been much change in terms of distance as required if a person needs to go and submit an application or do an extension. They would still need to go to the main or the larger Home Affairs offices. That was what they would have done in the past. So there hasn't been much. It hasn't been a drastic change in terms of one centre being placed at a particular place. And in the past, the volume would have been at that particular office. It wouldn't have been at all of the offices. So we haven't seen that's had an impact where a lot of clients are saying they have an issue of distances to submit extensions of applications. In terms of the inspector capacity, that's my area, so I can talk to that area. We acknowledge that we do not have the inspector capacity that a similar unit has in other countries, and I think we've mentioned that before by our principals. We are no more than 800 or so inspectors nationally to do the job of doing all these inspections, doing follow-ups on visa that have expired. We do have systems within the department where we can tell where someone is overstayed on our movement control system. We can monitor, we go to that system, it will tell us when a person entered the country and the date that person should have left. If that person hasn't left, we got that list, overstayer list, which we are able to monitor. So it's part of our role as inspector is to monitor overstayer lists. It also tells when people issue a visa, if a visa has expired and it hasn't been been renewed. So there is a system we have within the department for tracking and monitoring people. We also would monitor the addresses that the person gave us, and the systems of engaging with our with partners within other departments who may have a, who have address databases in order to do that. So part of the inspectorate function is to trace people who are overstayers or people who are illegal. It's true, majority of the deportees, if you were to look at the statistics, it's clear. I mean, top four or top three countries, it would be three of our neighbouring countries. But we do deport. Why that? We have had we do have many cases of nationals from outside of the Slavic area, and even outside of Africa. People coming from the Asian from Asia, subcontinent, as well as Europe. We do have those cases, but they're going to be minimal to the number of people from neighboring countries who are here as economic migrants and know how to, and have been coming for a number of years. It does make us, there would be the majority of those that we may find illegal in the country. In terms of the question on the 60% complement, it is within South Africa, as was asked by the Honourable Member and sought confirmation. It's unlikely that we would second guess Labour. If Labour conditions are not complied with, we would use that as a decision for refusal. And a person could submit an appeal, or they're entitled to appeal a decision, and they could say that, well, maybe the assessment by Labour wasn't correct because they said the skill needed was a boiler maker. But the type of skill, critical skill I have, is not as simple as that. It's a very, very, very specific skill which is different to that. And that would be an appeal, maybe on an appeal process. And of course, in considering the appeal, we would want to seek confirmation that maybe that's correct, maybe we need to look at that again. So that's allowed in there. I mean, the engagement between the two departments is paramount and continuous. I think all the other ones I'll ask Mr. Marule and Mr. Mbele, they're both directly within their areas to assist with the answering panel. Thank you, Chairperson.
The response to questions. The way you answer these questions that relate to location and tracking of people who are inside illegally, your response is like it's an easy. You know where they are. You are assisting, you know when the permit is expiring. I want to talk about what we have seen. Can you tell us how come then that you have a number of farm workers who are there under appalling conditions, treatment that they get there, they are there. We called you because we know where Department of Labor can come in and where they will have obstacles. And the farm owners are very clear about that though. They know it and they use it to the latter. And then we found that the gap is from the Department of Home Affairs. You see, for us, it's not only about the farms being flooded by foreigners, but it's also to see the exploitation that is there for people who have no permit. For people who are vulnerable, anything can happen to them at any time, and they can be threatened because they have no permit, they have nowhere to go. So the abuse that is there, Department of Labor cannot deal with it. Now, if it is so easy, you know who is there. If we go to those farms tomorrow, we just go to those farms that we're in, are you saying to us that all is cleared. If we go there tomorrow, all that is cleared. Because also, those people are not treated like, I think the animals of some of those farmers are more treated, better treated than what we have seen there. That is also a worry, because human beings are human beings. So the number of worries for us as members of parliament. And we know that definitely the farm bosses, the expiring of permits will not really bother them. Because if they are in that condition, anything is possible. Because if tomorrow, if that farmer gives him problems, the farm worker gives him problems and knows that he has no permit, he can pick up the phone and phone the police and there's someone who is in my farm, got here, any story. And those people are vulnerable. They have no say. The people will listen to, you know, an employer and believe. There are a number of things that can happen to those people. Now, I think make us comfortable and say, Parliament, go back to Mpumalanga. I will give you my official who will not be denied an access, who will be able to get every document that we want to see on the spot, go to those funds, all is well. That's all what I need from you. Thank you.
The response by the department for me is that just a reply. He doesn't attach value to the questions that I posed to him. Because for him to say the people in those former Home Affairs offices, their service is still there, it is not they have been there. It's not just anything that I'm talking about. I'm talking about that, anything that I've seen. The people are not serviced in the Home Affairs in Queenstown. They say the service has been taken away from them. So anyone who wants to renew a visa doesn't get a assistance there. And the policy of the African National Congress says you take services closer to people. Is that hotels are closer to the people of the northern region, of the Eastern Cape? It is not. And services are not given to people of Queenstown by your office. They say that that function has been taken away from them. It's not a joke. You can't just give me that reason.
Honorable Fonsavage, a follow-up question?
Thank you, Chairperson. You've indicated that you have a system, an overseer list, so there is a system monitors there. So what are you doing with that list? And can you perhaps give us the stats in terms of how big the problem is in terms of overstayers? And how much time are you granting before you intervene in terms of people overstaying?
Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, Chairperson, we take all of this very seriously. And if I could just maybe just indicate, as I've said, the inspectorate unit is, we are not more than 800. And if you look at the deportation figures that we've had in the last year, we deported over 30,000 people. Previous years it was higher. And that's done in a small capacity that we have compared to international figures of a similar unit. But there is nothing in the mandate of the inspectorate requires us to do what you're suggesting, to go to a farm and check permits, to go to business places and check permits. There's no such thing as a no-go area or an official not being allowed to go there. That is what they do. We are mandated to do that. Our mandate is to ensure everybody in South Africa is here on a lawful basis. So there's no two ways. We can give the assurance that fine. The particular funds that were visited by honourable members, we can do inspections there immediately. It's not impossible. Officials can go there and do that.
as they may have done so in the past. But I don't know. We certainly can do that. On the other issues regarding the issues of the exploitation that is encountered there, no, we understand that. I mean, we are, as Home Affairs, we're also part of human trafficking task teams that deal with issues of people who've been trafficked, vulnerable groups, all of those things. We are part of those teams. We join Labour on some of the inspections and operations that are conducted, or they join us vice versa. So we are there to assist. Our role will be to come in and see, are these people holding valid permits, or are they totally undocumented? And if that's the case, that is up to Home Affairs to attend to. So that role we're there to undertake. As I indicated, my colleagues who are involved in permitting maybe will expand on the issue regarding the Queenstown matters. Just so that I can assure the Honourable Member, I was not making less of the question, but they'll guide us with more clarification because they actually work specifically in that area. The overstayer list, when we reported to Parliament last year during the incidents that happened with foreign nationals, and we had indicated then that the overstayers that we had at the time was over 300,000 overstayers that we had a record of. That those were people whose visas had expired. Those were the figures that we gave at the time. But we can provide that list. That is something that we can obtain from records that we have within the department as well.
Though we have not allowed department members, because we might be caught up by time, where we need clarity from Department of Labor. Because though they represent, we know the lines where they can go and where they can end. And what we are telling you here, Home Affairs, is not something that we think we were there. It's Home Affairs. We were there with the department. The farm owners know exactly how to respond to Home Affairs and how to respond to the Department of Labor, because the roles that are played by these two departments, they know them very well. And if that was not the case, I thought it would be easy for the Department of Labor not to be accompanied by Home Affairs, just to go in there and ask for permit and want to check permit. And some owners are sitting in. If you are saying it's an easy situation like that, then tell us, because the Department of Labor is accounting for us. Then it means we won't need to call you and ask why so many foreigners are there. It would mean that the Department of Labor, wherever they get into those premises, they will want all those permits. When they decide, they find that and farm owners comply. And once they find that, then they are able just to give you a list and say, go and give you this arrest or deport. What is the situation? Just tell me what's the situation. What is the status in terms of that relationship? If I can hear that from you, say, please.
It's done on an operation basis. If there's inspections that we undertake to specific areas, if we're doing business inspections or farm inspections, we could invite other departments to come with us on those operations, and vice versa. If that same situation is happening with them, they call us to come and do that.
Can the Department of Labor go to any of those farms and ask to issue the permit?
And on the basis of that, the Department of Labor will be in a position to say, you don't have permit, your permit has expired, and take all that data, or call you and say, we are here in this farm, 1, 2, 3, 4, this is the data that you have, deal with them, according to the law. Can they do, and are the farm owners obliged to comply when the Department of Labor is looking for permits? Because the issue here is issues of the basic conditions of labor. It's issues, many issues that are related to, because you know when people talk about the farms, about the abuse, about everything, the Department of Labor takes the flag, forgetting that there are certain things that before they can get or deal with their issues, they have to work, they must, there's a partnership. For me, all I need you to say is that the Department of Labor, it can go in and ask for permits and then deal with the situation. But if that was the situation or that is the situation, then we're going to whip the Department of Labor because they'll be failing us. They can't tell us about the Home Affairs. They should be saying, Home Affairs, we were there. This is the list. These families have expired. Deal with them. And in that case, you will not fail them. But do they have that power? Will then the employer comply? Or what is the situation? Without you?
They can inform us, but they don't have the mandate. It's only in terms of determining whether a person has status in the country and someone being allowed to be, and the person not having status being detained, only the police and immigration can do that. But Labour would indicate that they believe these people on this farm do not have documents.
Okay.
Yes.
No, thank you. Then I think so far we are right. If not anybody can go in those farms, even in terms of the department, and check the status of the workers in those farms, it's only you. So it's not then 100% correct to say anybody can come in. They can only come in and deal with those issues that are dependent on you. And some of those farm owners, very arrogant, even to the inspectors of labor, we were there with them. It was difficult, it was not easy. All I will ask from you, from today, when you leave, you must focus on those farms. You start with Malawi. All those farms that are closer to the borders, they are the ones that help people who are coming, our own fellow Africans, who are treated like animals, who have no permits. But it suits the employers for them to be there, because they're not going to be bothered by joining trade unions, you know, because the data they are here illegally. Some of them, they don't even come through your official borders. They come in different ways because they're sorry for where, and they find themselves trapped there. And it is you, only you, who can save them. So when we call you for the report in the farms, all farms around the country that are closer to the border, we'll call you. 3 months will be too much for you, but it won't, we'll give you just 3 months, and you are going to tell us in this farm, and just go in any farm. Maybe we'll start with Mpumalanga or Limpopo and check and go in. That everybody, and when you do that, you will then work with the Department of Labor and say, this is what we have done, so that by the time we call you, that when you get that report, we'll then go there. That situation is horrible. And I think the Department of Labor is failing us there.
in terms of reflection. Despite you might be getting reports that all is well, it is not all well in those farms. At times when you get this report, you must take this report and go and check there. Because everybody, you know, the conditions in the farms, that's the worst in the country when you talk about the conditions. And you find these people are not here. They have no protection. They can't even leave those farms, even those woods. The farm owners don't want them to leave. So we are relying on you. Focus on that. We will call you for the steps, and then we will go to this, all the farms. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I shall attempt to cover some of the areas which were not covered, but my understanding is that the majority of the issues have been covered. If I may start with the issue of UFS, Honorable Chairperson, we are aware that the provinces that we have instituted VSS have distances that they need to travel to apply for visas. And it is true that in Eastern Cape we have one office in each province except in Gauteng. And the reason being that this was the start of a process which we call government partnering with business. Government partnering with business because we did not have resources. You know, without taking your time, there have been problems about applications at the Department of Home Affairs getting lost, applications that would not be accounted for, applications that took forever, and I think honorable members might be aware of those problems. Now, in order for government to bring in efficiency, we partnered with business. And introduced what we call a visa facilitation services, which is done worldwide. We have benchmarked with a number of countries in the world which are using a visa facilitation processes, but it might be another company. So that's the process that we have introduced is what we call government partnering with businesses for efficiency. If you look at the processes now, the processes are seamless. They are efficient. There is an increase. We have reported in the IMC that there is an increased rate of applications being processed within a turnaround time because of the processes we are taking place. We are aware of the distances. As such, we have in our minister, Honorable Kiara, has indicated in the budget vote that we will be opening an office in Port Elizabeth, an additional office in Eastern Cape. We will be opening an additional office in KZN, and we're planning to open an additional office in Western Cape. So these are offices that we're rolling out as we move on continuously. We know we will not be able to cover all the people at the moment, but we can assure you that we are rolling out these services to provinces in order to ensure that we take services to the people. In terms of the processes that happens, the number of issues that have been Mr. Matthews has addressed in terms of the farms. But what I want to add is that prior to Home Affairs issuing a visa for people to work in the farms, the Department of Labor has the inspection, has the diligent search, has work to ensure that the employer complies with Labor Relations Act. The employer complies with the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. The employer complies with all regulatory framework. And once the Department of Labor is happy that the employer or the farmer adheres to these regulations, is then that the recommendation is made to the Department of Home Affairs for the Department of Affairs to issue a corporate a visa. And therefore that leads to the question that has been responded to, that we will not second guess the recommendation of the Department of Labor. We will implement it
as the Department of Labor advises. In terms of the processes in slide 14, they run concurrently in terms of the Department of Labor and the Department of Trade and Industry in relation to application for corporate visas. Suffice to say that in as far as farm workers are concerned, the Department of Trade and Industry do not play a role in that space. It is a space limited to the Department of Labor. The Department of Trade and Industry will play a role in other categories of corporate. Maybe Sasol wants to bring some people here to work at Mitupi or other corporates. Then the Department of Labor or Department of Trade and Industry will play a role together with the Department of Labor in an intergovernmental relations that we play together as government officials, Home Affairs, Labor, and the GTI. In terms of the contracts, I suppose it's correct, Honourable Member, that the contract of employment will then have to comply with all labor legislation, including payment of a foreigner, whether the foreigner is not paid less or whether the foreigner is not paid more. And that, as I indicated, would have been checked by our colleagues from the Department of Labor, whether that employer complies to those conditions as stipulated. In terms of what is regarded as national interest, national interest is what will benefit the country in terms of job creation. As we know, in the country we're dealing with issues relating to poverty eradication, employment creation, the high employment rates. And what is in the national interest is what will benefit and contribute to the three aspects that we have raised as government as our priority. Something that will bring employment to our South Africans who are unemployed will in most cases, to a large extent, be regarded as being in the national interest. First to say that there will be some other businesses that our colleagues at the Department of Trade and Industry have determined as undesirable businesses. Much of those businesses will employ South Africans. They might not be in national interest as recommended by the Trade and Industry. And we have a list of them, of such businesses that are not in the national interest. And why farm workers are foreigners and they replace South Africans, and the farm workers are not critically skilled. It's a very dicey question. I'm quite sure my colleagues from the Department of Labor will assist me here. But the research that has been done indicates that the majority of South Africans do not work or do not want to work in farms. Now the situation that you find is that you find a big a farm in a particular province that generates income for the country, runs business and also exports some of the items. Very critical business that contributes to the GDP of the country. But because South Africans, as the research tells us, are not willing to work in farms. Or when they work there, the stories that we hear when we engage is that when they work here, they will work for a week or two, they disappear and all those things. Then the employer or the farmer is then forced or compelled to then look for employment somewhere in order to run the business and ensure that the business continues and contributes to the economy. Now, that recommendation that comes to Home Affairs has already been determined by the Department of Labor, that indeed, in that particular farm, you will need to give the farmer 400 people. So what we do as Home Affairs, we facilitate what our colleagues would have
time would have refreshed and informed us.
So that was that is the issue. But I'm sure when they present it, they will address it to assist me if I captured it correctly. You know, that also applies to the 60% as raised by honourable members who monitor that 60%. But we say the 60% of employees to be in the operational business. Our colleagues in an intergovernmental relations process that we are engaged in from the other department determine that for us and make sure that the employer complies to 60% requirement as stated. Some of the people indicated that in some of the people indicate that they're finding it difficult to get new permits. I think it's something that will take honourable chairperson and honourable members, because we have simplified our processes for farm workers. We also have, you know, bilateral discussions with our neighbouring countries. So it's something that we will take up and investigate and with the purpose of finding a solution to make sure that whoever is in the farms is in the farm legally, and those that are within our responsibility is to ensure that we assist everybody to comply, and those that are finding it difficult to extend their visas in the farms, we will investigate and ensure that it is done. Because you're right, honourable chairperson, when people are not having valid visas, they are subject to exploitation and they become vulnerable. And we know of examples that you have given. So we will take that advice and make sure we assist the people that have challenges in obtaining a work visa. And I'm sure we'll do that in consultation with our colleagues from the Department of Labour. Thank you, Mr. President. If there is anything I did not address, I'll ask my colleague to address it.
I want Home Affairs to repeat what they say for record, that the Department of Labor gives them a go-ahead to allow foreigners to replace South Africans working in the farms because South Africans do not want work. When South Africans are saying there's a higher rate of unemployment, I just want them to confirm that again.
So while I'm going to take talk on that issue, because I want to add, and you're also going to talk on, I think that this is a relation, an interesting one, because when both departments enter into that agreement, it cannot be a gentleman's agreement. When we are saying that the only people that we can take from outside are people whose skills are tests. And if you decide the departments to then come up with something else, I'm sure that cannot be done overseas. That is in black and white. So I'm riding on what my colleagues have just said about that agreement. Of course, they will be there here. Fortunately, they will speak for themselves. Let me allow further follow-up questions. Honourable Tongwane?
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to check if I heard you correctly. Did you say prior to Home Affairs giving the work permit, the Department of Labour must first do conduct their own research? The reason why I'm asking is because the chairperson indicated to this meeting that in Mpumalanga farms, there are people that found themselves under the appalling conditions because some of them came to South Africa, not even through the official border post, but because of being desperate for work. And how do you deal with those that you never applied for work permit and found themselves under such conditions? information. And who informs who between Department of Labor and Home Affairs that there are so many people that are, that have applied for work permits? Thank you.
Chairperson, we spoke previously about unannounced visits because we know that what we've experienced, it was during an announced visit, so appointment has been made. So what we found during an announced visit was scary, so I wouldn't imagine what would have happened if that visit was unannounced. But speaking particularly to one farm, it was, even if we arranged an appointment, it was so difficult to get entry to that farm. Even in the presence of the immigration officers, in the presence of the Department of Labor who arranged the visit. So my question will then be, that seeing that we have the interest of those workers at heart, it's not an attack on anyone or any department or questioning the credibility of anyone. But the question remains, how effective, we're looking at the unemployment sex of 355,000 people who lost their jobs during the first quarter of 2016. And you are saying you have an overstay rate of currently in 2050 of more than 300,000 people. That is what you have on record. But what is the real state of affairs? That's my concern. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, Mr. Doos will assist me with the issues of illegals. Let me deal with the issue of the process between ourselves and the Department of Labor. The DGI to a certain extent. We coupled with what the person, Honorable Chairperson, has indicated in terms of the skills that we bring to the country, we have what we call critical skills. The critical skills applicants do not go through the process of checking by the Department of Labor or the DGI or any other department, because that process of compiling a critical skills list has already taken place and all consultations have been done. Then you have critical skills list. So South Africa will have a list of skills that we need. That's one area. The other area, you have an area that is called general work visa, where anybody works anywhere, any company here that wants to employ a foreigner. Now, in the area of general work visa, is one of the two areas where the Department of Labor will then have to determine that indeed this skill that you are bringing is what we need, and that this is the person that can work, and we therefore recommend that the person be granted with visa or not. Now the third category is what happens in the farm. It's a corporate visa. Now, in a corporate visa is where a farmer wants to bring a large number of people to come and work in a farm. Reasons that he provides might be, I can't find South Africans, or whatever reasons that he provides. It's not a gentleman's agreement, Honorable Chairman. It's a lawful provision in the Immigration Act that says for a corporate visa to be issued, prior to the issuing of that corporate visa, the Department of Labor must determine the numbers, make determination as to what do we recommend. Now, for every corporate visa that we issue as Home Affairs, we get the number from the Department of Labor to say employ 400 people. Now, the other corporate that I've indicated where you've got your specialized skills, you will then have both the Department of Labor and the Department of Trade and Industry determining and saying to Home Affairs, we recommend in the national interest that this business can have 200 people to be employed in a corporate. So that is a corporate visa. So That's what happens in other businesses and also in the farms. Now, for people who are illegal, those are not those are directly, I think Mr. Mills will have addressed, those are directly Home Affairs responsibility to make sure that everybody who works, wherever to work, they are legal, they have a documentation. I think Mr. Mills will cover it. I think I should address these three categories so we understand that the farms are governed by corporate visas and it goes through the Department of Labor. Thank you.
On that one, I think we listened carefully as you were talking about categories of workers. But often said is when you said if the Department of Labor, when you talk about this, then it's clear that you are referring to this corporate visa. How does it go? You get the mandate from the Department of Labor. Now tell us, when you get that mandate, what do they say? Do they say, here is the list, or the farmer goes to the Department of Labor, or goes to wherever they have to go, and then the farmer then decides on his own to get these people, because he has been given go-ahead by the department responsible in the county. How do you then get those people in the farm? Who's there? Is it the farmer who identifies them? What happens? Because with the other corporate visas, you've got names that are going. Yeah? You've got a number of things. You know exactly with farmers. How do you do? Because then if that is the case, in the farms that you have been visited, we'll say you have been misled, and you must tell us that in these farms, the Department of Labor has said, we need 400 farm workers because South Africans are not willing. I don't think you should tell us about the law, how it should be operating. I think here we are specific. It's fine giving us that framework of focus, but here we are addressing specific issues and specific farms that we visited. I don't think you should bring in what you do if it does not apply there. Tell us, be specific and say, such, we've got it, because that should be done in writing, in any case. That's why I talk about it. We can say, we don't know why you are asking us about Mpumalanga members of farming. Because in Mpumalanga, or you can say, which farm did you go to? Because within this farm, you will have 400 or 500 farm workers. And we got the list and whatever, the mandate from the Department of Labor that in those farms in Mpumalanga, workers, or South African workers are not willing. I think here, let's give it a check. And we should not confuse with each other. I'm apologizing if I confuse you, but be specific. Don't tell us that it does apply. Let's go to Mpumalanga. Go to farms that you know and say, in these farms, I don't know about Mpumalanga. You didn't tell me. In Mpumalanga, yes, it says in applied. We had to give the Department of Labor 200 or 100 or 50 and agree with them that they must go to those farms. Is that the case there? Because now, when we tell you about what we have seen and our concerns, we want to confuse you. You should not be confusing us. You should just speak and say, honourable members, we don't know what the department is doing. We went that far. We have agreed with them. They go ahead, we have reached people there. Tell us about that. So that you don't go around, it's about the bushes, it's straight.
There's a hand
before you speak. Honorable Fanstavik.
Thank you, Chairperson. The presenter mentioned that there's a research on farm work, or South Africa doesn't want to work on farms. And we have the information made available to the committee also.
because as I can recall, in one of the farms we found a big number of people, which the farm worker also said that that is the reality on a daily basis. The South Africans come to the farm on a daily basis asking for jobs, and he can't actually employ majority of them. But that is the scenario on a daily basis, as per the information given by the that information.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'll ask also Mr. Mbele to assist me. Honorable Chairperson, we are not privy of specific farms that we can say for now, as you say, that there is farm A in Mpumalanga that has people, whether we can confirm now as we sit here that in that farm labor has recommended that we employ 400, we issue 400 corporate visas. We have to look for that. We do not have that, unless Mr. Mbele can comment, but we do not have that, because we first have to look at the name of the farm, and we go to our records, we see if ever there was an application for a corporate visa, and we see if there was a recommendation from the Department of Labor, and we see if we have issued the corporate visa. So we do not have a direct answer on that. What I was explaining was just a process, but in terms of a specific farm where I can respond and say, in this farm in Mpumalanga, did you as Home Affairs get the recommendation? So we can say we don't have facts now.
Those people who fall under category then would not definitely be the ones that are referring to, because those ones that you are talking about, you talk about the list, it means that those people are covered. They can't fall under this category that you are referring to. You see, members of department don't, when you ask questions, don't just answer. Because now I'm going to ask you, why then did you bring these questions in? Of the Department of Labor, you know, the agreement says that it's something that you should have said and understand. There are cases that we will check. But the way you presented it is like, we don't know what you are talking about, because in any case, the fault is not with us. Home Affairs, the Department of Labor is at fault. But if you were presenting it in a different way of informing us that we should be alerted, there are situations where you do this and you don't have the information with you now. And perhaps those farmers that you visited, it might be some of them, this is what we have done. Then we will take this slide, at least you have been honest and being, you know, but you present it as if we, you know, it's like we don't understand what you are talking about, then you must understand. I think I don't think we like that approach. That's not the right approach. And where you brought in that it was in a form of defense. It was a form of defense, you should have brought that thing in a different way. So that you are not surprised. It's something that you are alerting that there is this accident. Because when it came in when we were talking, telling you about the stars of workers are there who have no permits, who are from outside. We might at times people think that members of parliament, they don't know or they don't understand. They don't know what they're doing, they just ask questions for questions. It's not the case. Present us, if you have something that you have no facts on, don't tell us, or tell us that there is this situation, but I will make this information available to you as soon as possible. And it's possible that that might have taken place. It would have been presented to us in a better way, not presented to us and say, you don't know what you are talking about. You know, the times, you know, what kind of labor that has this. So, really. So, please. And in fact, I agree with my colleague. Where that has taken place, we need that information. That we are not going to, we don't want to wait for you. It must be forwarded to the secretary, and we get the list and forms. And it means definitely that information that you have. So that they go to these farms and do the announced visits. We have this list with us. We know who is who. And definitely that is available. Thank you. Other questions?
I think those are our responses. I think the Honourable Chairperson, we'll be more than willing to, we will be leaving our details, and we will provide facts and any more and more verification as is required, and we commit to doing the inspections as requested. I think we are more than willing to assist them, and we don't take what has been raised with us lightly at all. We take very seriously. We'll respond. And seek to address all these matters as soon as possible. I don't know if there's anything else requested.
Then I don't see hands from the members. I'll take this opportunity to thank you for agreeing to come to us, give yourself time to come and talk to us, because now we are more clearer than before of what we should get from you and what we should get from the department of labor. We will know when to pick up the phone to call you. In fact, we'll call you when you get response. You take all the people. No, I don't want all of them. I'll call you that. So that when we go to these farms, we'll find things that we know that or that we feel that you have saved us. We then can talk to you directly. But in the meantime, you go to the farm and check. We are more on your face at this stage until we are proven wrong. Thanks. Department of Labor will give 5 minutes or 2 minutes? Three minutes. The bells of anger.
Mr. Matthews' first name. Did he put it there?
Modiri.
Good heavens. Doesn't look like Modiri. And the DG that's answering most of the... He was having a bit of a hard time. We haven't seen, she doesn't speak at all. Here we go. Is that environmental affairs? Or is that labour? I think it must be that guy. Yeah, permit. Thank you, my dear. I'll write it down here. Ronnie, it looks like, doesn't it? Ronnie Mahruli. Thanks a lot. Acting CO permits. Thanks a lot. Thanks for help. I'm Hoff, by the way, and I do a parliamentary report for the American Chamber. For the oil and gas industry. sort of light usage book, but it's much more, I press it down to about a page each meeting.
How did you do that? Were the Americans?
Well, it's, you see, in your case, it's more like minutes.
Yes.
Whereas I pick up the points that hurt business.
Okay.
I'm not really interested in all this farm work and all that. And nothing that he came up, because she's been on about farm work for about 3 years. It's her favorite thing. I'm obviously interested in business permits for chief executives and skilled artisans coming into the country for products, which really didn't come up too much. But I was interested in that first bill, as its members bill. I think it's quite interesting, isn't it? Paternal leave. Last amending of that.
Place of partner, main staff, currently suspect in the home affairs. Okay, so maybe I should.
I love you.
Members, can we just allow the department to zoom? Listening to the questions that you posed from Department of Home Affairs, maybe what you can tell us is your relationship in your way, and there is what is in law, but also the practice. So that, and then highlight if there are any challenges in terms of implementation of this, and where you find problems, and where just zoom. Don't go all over. We don't want your vision. We don't want anything. Just zoom to the problem, taking into account what we have said. In fact, there's some question that I forgot. The gentleman kept on talking about, we look at there are times when we look at the certificate or granted and say, or to be granted and say there's no need, because there are these skills, there are skills here. I just want to check the consultation, that's in consultation, whether it come, whether it end. Is it, how do you work? Come up with your working relationship.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. I'm going to skip the range of slides. We had initially structured our presentation to cover mainly the migration management interventions across government and come to the Department of Labor rules. Now, I think the first slide just gives you what Home Affairs has given to you in terms of the aid where we are not involved. And I think the slide number 9 gives you a sense in terms of the work that we do in the department, because honorable members will appreciate the fact that we are part of the African Union, and the African Union work with the four regions, and we are part of the SADC region. And within the SADC region, there are protocols on employment and labor, the SADC labor migration policy framework, which were signed by our president, and those also link to the African Charter on Human People Rights and the migration policy framework for Africa. So whatever we do is aligned with that, and I also highlighted the fact that our work is also informed by the conventions of the ILO, especially Convention 91, 97. And we can also put some slides from slide 10 to slide number 15, which gives honorable members a sense of the coordination. A range of issues that honorable members are raising today were raised by the ministers, and as a result, they established this multi-task teams that are headed by ministers.
And we have agreed on a number of outcomes that we are supposed to address and hold ourselves home as a whole range of departments on borders like defense, police, etc. We all report to that interministerial task team, especially on a range of issues that honorable members have raised. I'm sure when you arrive at the airport, you find health, you find trade and industry, you find police, others looking at drugs and all that. So that task team of ministers on migration is dealing with a whole range of issues, and here we're giving you a sense in terms of those lines. And we report on a regular basis, SASA on grants, DSD, urban culture, and so on. I won't go into those. Now, I'll go straight to what the chairperson said. I think, like we said, if I can say, our involvement in the department is threefold. The first one is to make sure that we prevent the displacement of local labor. And that is in line with international best practices and the role of ministers of labor. Secondly, is to ensure that we promote the inflow of skills where we don't necessarily have. And thirdly, is to make sure that we assist the placement of South Africans abroad, the diaspora and all that. So those are the three areas of intervention. And slide, I think we outlined that in the slide number 16. Now, just to go straight to what the Honorable Chairperson said, I want to go to focus on challenges, and I'll go straight to slide number 21. Now, I think colleagues from Home Affairs, while they raise those issues, I think it is only fair, Honorable Chairperson, to also indicate that while we have put systems on both the Department of Labor side and the Department of Home Affairs side, we still find syndicates. I'm sure with doing away with the, I think Home Affairs colleagues did indicate that there were official or people outside that were used to call my migration practitioners who used to make their living out of taking applications of people and submitting them to Home Affairs. And because of corruption and problems and so on, Home Affairs took away that function. But the truth is that those people still exist and they still continue to try every trick in the book. When they apply some cases to us, they inflate numbers, because when you go to check, for instance, they'll say an employer X is looking for some numbers, and when you go to that address, it does not exist, or it exists, the employer is only looking for five, but the practitioner is trying to get the numbers so that if an employer, for instance, is granted five people, then they can use the permit issued by our colleagues in Home Affairs to bring in 20. Now, the 20 would then pay the money as part of, you know, trafficking to come into the country. I'm sure you have seen checkpoint kind of story where similar kind of practices were done with people from Lesotho and somebody keeping their passports and all that. So I think it's only fair to accept that those practices still continue to exist. The other one, I think the colleague from Home Affairs and I think Honorable Mantashe repeated this question to say that we are recommending because South Africans don't want to work. I don't think it's completely correct. The issue is that those are some of the perceptions that continue to be propagated by a range of people for their own reasons. And there is no official research that confirms it. We know, for instance, that there are reasons on both sides. There are allegations on South Africans, for instance, if you ask them why they would not want to go and work in the farm. Some of them will tell you that conditions are better than others, but we also equally have proof that in those places where the Department of Agriculture has given farming tractors and all that, young people from the cities are now going into farms and starting their own farming, which means that there's nothing wrong with farming. The only thing is the treatment of people and the perception that some farmers are creating in those farms and translating them into facts as of, you know, and then use that as an excuse. But I don't think there's scientific basis that concerns that, because we have seen the opposite where people in cooperatives, for example, own farms. If you look at the program on agriculture in the morning before 6 o'clock, you see, Honorable Chairperson, the number of farmers or African people who have denied the right to farm that are now going into farming because they really enjoy farming. So it's not an accurate statement. And I think the other thing, point number three that we have also raised, is that I think this is an issue that our staff and Home Affairs, and with your guidance, we are going to take seriously. I know that our inspection division is not here, but Honorable Chairperson and members, I think you will recall that agreements with AgriSA that were reached because they were saying they are being attacked by people walking into their farms, which was a valid point, but unfortunately that point is used against us, because when we make appointments and farmers know that they have illegal or undocumented migrants, that gives them an opportunity to move. So when you go there, they are not there. And sometimes when you speak to employed people, they look at them like this, and then if they say something, the next thing they are released. So the issue of joint inspection between the inspectors of the department and the inspectors of the Department of Home Affairs is something that we have identified, accompanied by police, so that we can begin to address this problem of farm killings, because they use it as an excuse. If we have the police in our presence, we have Home Affairs officials, we have all officials, and we can identify ourselves, I think we can begin to deal with this problem. Unannounced supplies, raids in these inspectors, and working jointly. And I think I'll take it up with the DG Labour, and I'm sure we'll convene a meeting with Home Affairs at DG update. We've been raising this issue, it's not only in the farming, in the construction, in the security industry, in restaurants, especially in hospitality. People are working for tips, and they come late at night. We're planning also on some inspections. So we are arranging the work of our inspectors to work at night, so that you can go into a restaurant at 9 o'clock. It's not full. But if you go 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock, month end, in most places you find them full, and you find a lot of undocumented migrant workers working for tips, not anywhere registered in their books and all that, but wearing t-shirts and names of those companies. And I think those are some of the areas we are planning to do. And I mentioned point 5 on page 20, on slide number 26, that employers, in most cases, when we do payroll audit, they don't indicate that the employee undocumented foreigners, because they know the consequences in terms of Section 49 of the Immigration Act. Now, there were areas where you raised questions which Ms. Chibani will talk about. But just in the last week, Honorable Chairperson and members, in a process led by the minister in the Malelane alone, police inspections were conducted in 50 farms and 3 in Bombela, unannounced. And I think in most cases, you'll appreciate things like cell phones and all that. The minute you hit one farm, because they've got rapid response SMSs in case they are being attacked and all that. Web goes out immediately to all other parts in the region that the department has arrived if you have 1, 2, 3 move, etc. So technology, while it has got positive spin-offs, unfortunately it also assists them to alert each other, and you will hit only 1 or 2 farms. By the time you get to the third farms, already word has gone out, and I think those are some of the challenges that we continue to experience. On slide 34, we did indicate that we are also going to be, point number one, I addressed on the joint inspection and the sector's account against payroll. This is basically in areas where we find them working and not necessarily employed. The third point, Chairperson, I think this with this issue that colleagues touched on. Where we conduct raids, you find foreign or undocumented migrants. Now, ordinarily, you are supposed to deport them. On the other hand, we have treaties with the neighboring countries that says our national works in your company, and when you deport them, like they normally do in construction, people like Fridays, when it's supposed to be payday, they phone friends that are police so that they come in vans and all that. And then construction workers are forced to jump over the walls and all that and run away because they know that if they are arrested, they will go to Lendrani and they are going to be deported. But in the process, they will be leaving behind their salaries. They will be leaving behind money that employer withheld as being part of UIS and all that. So between ourselves and Home Affairs, we now have to look at some of those things to say, how do we deal with an employer? Because our labor laws protect every worker, irrespective of whether they are illegal or not. Any worker is supposed to enjoy all the rights that are provided for in the Constitution. However, they are also supposed to comply. Being illegal does not reduce the status to receive less rights. Now, the question is, how do we then deal with an employer that we found to have subjected, like you said, honorable members, somebody to, for 20 years, to substandards and all that? And we raised this issue with the Department of Justice, because when you open a case and you deport a person, the case goes to court. There are no witnesses because the person is deported. And what the magistrate does is to dismiss the case, and the farmer goes scot-free. They have got very, very good advisors who study the laws and how it operates, and they tell them that this is how you do it, this is how you do it, you frustrate the process, you win this case and all that. And these are some of the things that we'll have to look at, because the more Home Affairs keeps people in the country, they have to feed them, you know, in the camps and all that. And you know, our justice system directs and all that. And one of the things we're suggesting was that, how do we look into things like 2010, where you have special courts where a person of that nature, before they can be processed, take them through that process, you do the processing, etc. But this is part of the ongoing discussions with the labor court, so that we can, I think there's an acknowledgement that there are gaps in our processes, and we need to find mechanisms to deal with that. And again, Honorable Chairperson, the question of support systems for work seekers. In most cases, when permits are issued because people are not available, in some cases it's not completely the case. What you will find, Honorable Chairperson and members, is that in Umalang, there may not be those people, but those people will be available in the Northern Cape or Western Cape. So the issue has to do with, if you say those people are available in the Western Cape, how do we put in mechanisms in South Africa that will support South Africans to move internally? I mean, we all are migrants in our own country. We move between Cape Town, if I would tend to find roads stopped because people move to different places, so that you promote internal migration, South Africans moving and taking opportunities that are available. Because the reason why we integrated our system in the department was to make sure that even though people that are looking for may not be available in Mpumalanga, but if they are available in Free State, for instance, it's better to take people in Free State that are South Africans to take those opportunities that we further than to recommend paying for migrants and so on. And I'll skip the rest. You said I must also zoom on to our working procedures. Slide number 25 just gives you the process that was put in place in the department to process work permits, where initially I think they were quite, unlike the Home Office, we use our 126 labor centers, service points, and we are going to use internet to accept applications as well. Currently, they come to the 126 labor centers, or when our labor centers go manual. And we they normally do the inspection, which they've covered. And in most cases, where this inspection are conducted, let me also be upfront and say we've identified problems in some cases on the chairperson, and we have dismissed people in the Department of Labor, and I'm sure colleagues in the Home Affairs may also want to do this, in that sometimes somebody employed, and in some cases we receive letters of people that are not even employed in the department, who would write recommendations to our colleagues in Home Affairs, either using a letterhead of the department or in some cases of the provincial office to say recommend this work permit. Now, to deal with that fraudulent practices, all our provincial offices, even though they collect, they send everything, they do the what they are supposed to do, but recommendations come from one point, from his governor's office. Now, the certificate is only issued from one point, and I think colleagues from Home Affairs know that the minute they look at it, they can see that this one comes from Labor Department, this one does not come from Department of Labor. And I think, like we said, we can only recommend, they make the final decision, and they take into consideration other issues. Now, we tighten the system, and I'm sure on their part, we need to tighten the system that the recommendations are, that they entertain are only the genuine ones that come from one place, and that no other center processes work permits without those certificates. So obviously, that calls for us to meet on a regular basis. With, I think one of the things we are taking away is for us to intensify our meetings with our colleagues in Home Affairs and DTI to discuss issues that came out of the hearing today, so that we also are able to deal with syndicates outside, but also corrupt officials in our own department. Because the example that Honorable Lodiwa was raising, you may find that somebody in the department may have recommended it, but their certificate may not be a genuine one coming from the office, because they're in the adjudication committee. They are legal people. They are all people that have the necessary authority to sit there. And we have found instances in our cases where a recommendation, colleagues from Home Affairs will say we'll sit this in, and then we'll tell them that, no, look, this one does not come from the department. And I think tightening the processing of recommendations on both sides to eliminate syndicate and corrupt officials on both sides is going to help us on this issue. I think if I can go to the last point, slide number 25, we apart from what colleagues in Home Affairs are doing on the book chapter, in terms of the Employment Services Act, which this committee assisted the department in passing, there is a requirement that we come up with migration regulations that are aligned with the Immigration Act, and we are working on that, and the draft is available. Once the ES board is established, they will go on to finalize that. Secondly, I mentioned point two, I won't repeat it. Number three, we are required by 2019 to come up with a labor migration policy, and we are working with the ILO, which is aligned with the ILO convention. There are three conventions, and I'm sure once we have done that, we will then be approaching the Labor Portfolio Committee and the Home Affairs Portfolio Committee with the ratification, a request to ratify those conventions. But we cannot approach you because we don't have systems that are tight enough, that align with those conventions. And only once we've done that, there's a labor policy, and Home Affairs is now working on a blueprint on the labor, on migration that we are going to be making input on. And we're also working with that is both the ministers of labor and ministers of Home Affairs. Normally participate in the SADC Ministers of Labour and Home Affairs Joint Committees and within the AU Committee on Labour and Social Affairs and Home Affairs, where we look at the African charters and all that, and our policies are supposed to draw from there. And obviously there are good lessons that we're learning from the EU. As you may know, there's got free movement of labor, but that's a European Union and all that with different borders, and we're looking closely to the debate and the agreement signed by our president, head of state, on the protocol on labor, because they suggest that we collaborate in different ways, but we must have mechanisms and so on. And I think we're looking at that. And suffice to say that migration is a very complex issue, and it's not only confined to the Department of Labor and Home Affairs. Like we have said, there are all other departments in the Interministerial Committee, and we believe that if we can manage it properly, and we can do a range of recommendations that you have recommended, honorable members, and that ministers and other social partners continue to raise with us, we will achieve all these, address xenophobic problems, but at the same time address the high levels of unemployment, and also make sure that our people who came into the country are also able to go and seek work in their own countries of origin. And we also address the problem, and I was hoping that colleagues will touch on the issues around asylum seekers, also people who are in the country because of the special permits, the Zimbabwean suit and all that, because all those people add a strain also on the labor market situation, and they continue to exploit it. And those are areas that we must continue to collaborate as government departments, because one decision taken by other one department has unintended consequences in other departments and results in the issue that we are seeing in France. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Shimorotoba. Members, any clarity? Another put the contract, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's somehow difficult because the page numbers is vague for us. But I'll try to engage. I want to welcome the presentation as they presented. Although point of concern is that even though the department is trying to conduct that unannounced visits through the blesses, it's not through the challenges that you mentioned, it's not really assisting us in terms. So I think they should come up with other strategies. You know, you have to continuously try and do something new to in actual fact, take care of what your mandate is.
saying you need to do. In terms of the 4.2.2, you are mentioning in terms of statistics of work visa recommended to Department of Home Affairs. There you are mentioning that you had covered 9,073 workers, but 2,168 were negatively recommended during that period. Can you give us some of the reasons why they were negatively recommended? When looking at 4.2.7, you are mentioning there that some employed ones, some of the companies are not willing to take local labor market for availability of suitable labor. So my question would be, do they have a choice, or are you just granting them that wish that they don't want to take the local market? And what are you doing when they don't want to take the local market? And can you give an indication of if it is with regards to skills or unskilled workers? And if there are any substance to their demand? When you mention in terms of applications, 0.7, applications to renew visas for people already in the country where employees do not want to follow the application process. In one of the visits, one of the employers told us about a book with visas. They say they are being granted 30 days for each employee, and then every time they go to the border and just renew or get another book. Can you explain to us what is that process, and why do they allow the employers to not follow the application process? Is it because, or are they giving reasons? Because to us, they said it, the process is difficult. So is that the real reason why they don't want to follow the application process, or did you ever investigate why they are hesitant to renew those visas? I think I'll pause there, Chair, for now.
Please. Thank you, Honorable Function Business Orator.
Thank you, Honorable Fanskalvi. I think on the first issue around the strategies, that's why I did indicate that although Ms. Muiva is not here today, we did discuss this issue extensively to say that we need to change the manner in which we conduct unannounced inspection, and I did give examples of restaurants and construction workers because it is true that the manner in which we are doing it will not have any high impact, but also to jointly do them with Home Affairs and Police, unprotected infractions done by them on their own or us on our own, they are not having that good impact. And I think their presence here will also assist us when, for instance, Mpumalanga says we're conducting inspection. Last week in the 50 inspection, for instance, there were no Home Affairs officials, which goes back to what you were saying, and the minister was there, high level and all that. Now, you can imagine how much impact would have had had we also had Home Affairs in our process. Sometimes it's because of our arrangement or when we invite them, we didn't give them advance notice, or some cases give advance notice and before you could even conduct an inspection, weather has gone out to those people and then it's no longer a surprise because you took time. So there are all sorts of things. But I think we sat down and I think at high level with the police teams, we find ways of just taking them high profile in one area and make that kind of the reasons on 4.2.7 on the podcast, I think they range from a number of things. You know, when somebody doesn't want to do something, the quickest way of getting around it is to throw tantrums
and say the process is difficult. I've got fruit that are rotting and all that, and I must get the permit because I've got exports that I must meet and all that. And you know, workers also are very good. They study the time. The best way to demand salary increases is when they know that the employer is desperate, and if they don't pay, the fruits are going to rot and all that. So you find those kind of things. I don't think the systems may be difficult, but we did everything to make sure that people follow the process. And sometimes people go to newspapers so that they can get sympathy from the public and apply pressure to the system that I've long applied permits and all that. I'm not getting the permits, my fruits are rotting and all that. So all those things happen. And in some cases, Honorable Chairperson, you remember in the farms, some employers may not want to contribute to the minimum wage or the sectoral determination. Now, we have said with our colleagues in the labor relations, because an employer applies for an exemption, and once they apply for an exemption, if workers know that the minister has determined that this is the amount of money that they are supposed to be paid, they are going to definitely refuse to work for a lesser amount. And in those instances, what farmers were then doing was to then apply for a work permit to bring in people that they can then pay less because they have since applied for the variation. So what they were basically doing was to undermine the system by not paying the sectoral determination and bring in, for instance, Lesotho or other nationals, knowing that they will pay them a lesser amount after the variation that they have applied and they were granted. And in most cases, we have closed that loop to say, even when you bring in the foreign national, you must pay the same amount. But in some cases, some of the farmers are not employing those people. There was a question around how do we actually go about it. We have got proof in some areas. It's not the farmers who go and do the recruitment. The public brigades or labor brokers do the recruitment, and they come and sell those people to farmers. And they take them from one farm to the other to do sheep shearing, to do all sorts of things. So there are private employment agencies that are involved, or temporary employment services that transport and do the recruitment of some of these people from one area to the other. I think Honorable Chairperson there and Honorable Franz Kaffee, colleagues from Home Affairs are best placed to clarify the special dispensation, because we have similar offices, I think, in the borders in Zimbabwe, and these are offices where under the special permit dispensation, these are the 30 days, etc., where farmers would then go and recruit in from those farms, and maybe colleagues from Home Affairs can better clarify the procedure. But the issue is that that's where I said we need to synchronize those people, because a farmer can use that perpetually. You pass a law that talks about the labor relations. You remember the equal pay for work of equal value, and secondly the 30 days, I mean the 3 months provision, and that you then deem this person to be employed. So if we don't address the problem, then you may find that the 3 months becomes a 30 days in 3 years, where it is exploited on a daily basis. And I think if there's no understanding of, we close, it's like you have got a drum. You're trying to close all the holes, and then one department punches another hole unintentionally, and then it gets a leak and all that. So it's a question of how do we understand what each one is trying to do. Obviously, Home Affairs is also under pressure because of the large number of Zimbabweans and Mozambique. The agreements dating back to when Mozambique was still a colony of France, that also exempts Mozambique. exemptions from tax, that they also want exemption from a range of things that unfortunately have been forced, assigned with the previous government, and so on. So that colleagues can talk to you more about those things, because they also affect the labor market. And I think, like I said, we meet with AgriSA. We ask them to, you know, wherever they say things are difficult, so that they can explain to us what the difficulty is, and we can try and bring out processes. But you have seen it in employment equity, in everything else. Some employers will simply use difficult as a way out. I don't think that should be easy. I think people can say it's difficult because 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and we've gone to the department, we try to sort it out. They promised us X and they have not done that. But to just say it's difficult, generalizing without being specific, I think on that own, we still need to engage on that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Before Homer says, I just need to explore a statement that Mr. Muratova said in terms of when they want to do a blitz, and they inform Homer says, and by the time they in advance, by the time it's supposed to conduct the blitz, the news already out there. That is bringing me back to the attitude of one of the immigration officers that we met in Mpumalanga, who simply told us, I'm not going to explore this thing, because we must remember we can't make the farmers angry because they are putting food on our tables. That's what he said. And can you just get some clarity there? Maybe it is the wrong people to ask, because we can't expect the employers to explain on the conduct. But maybe there should be another entry point in terms of the immigration officers, inspectors, who's in a particular area for a long time was fostering relationships with some employees to such an extent that they feel they can't conduct their duties that they are being paid for. At the course of the friendships that they have with the employers. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, I think I did indicate that there is a lot of work. I was the first to admit that we do have, as leaders of both departments, a lot of work to uproot corrupt officials within our ranks who continue to damage our image, because they are not discharging their duties as they are supposed to. I think a typical example that you have indicated, without saying it's all access labor, but it demonstrates an official who does not want to bite the hands that may be feeding them in a particular way. And those elements are within us, and on our part, we are doing our best to check such elements so that we can take them to task or remove them from the department, because they are damaging the image of the department and the work that other officials are searching to realize. I can't comment specifically on the Home Affairs colleague, but I'm sure colleagues can talk to the steps that are there, because I also know that quite a number of officials on their side were not then dismissed for such conduct, but they can talk to them.
Okay, thank you. The only question that I would want you to clarify, are there any instances where you, as the Department of Labor, have used corporate visa in relation to
where the vulnerable workers, because here our focus is on vulnerable workers, where your farm workers, you talk to the entertainment industry. I can't think of construction workers. You should be in a position to say, we do know members of parliament that on such and such, you can't remember the date maybe, but you would say, we often use this corporate where there are no skills. At least you should be able to tell us where there are no, I'm not talking here about skills, I'm talking about farm workers. I'm talking about domestic workers, but let's just focus on these farm workers first. At which stage where you said the workers are not able to work and you can use, and when you do that, what to do? Do you have the list that you give? The second one is this, the labor brokers, or these agencies that work illegally. What do they do? They have the list of people, they go from farm to farm. How do they do that? Do they get the permits? Do they go with that bag of names to you to approve and go to Home Affairs or vice versa? Where do they get this list that they take to farmers, this bulk? Because then that bulk, I'm sure that's when this corporate visa will kick in, maybe, because it's a bulk and it's more than one. So just those two questions, I just hope you understand the questions. Have you used it? Have you done it with Home Affairs? In which cases?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. If Honorable Members can go to slide number 27, for instance. We give you statistics on the total corporate applications we received from the 1st of April to the 31st of March 2016. It was 61 in total, covering 9,073 workers. Of those 1,905, we recommended positively, was 2,168. We said we cannot support them. Now, in the sectors, bullet point number... Sorry.
The request
was submitted by various companies. Some of them may include the private employment agencies doing such applications on behalf of some of the farmers. And we also list the sectors, the agricultural sector, farm workers, mainly Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Lesotho, Namibia, and Botswana. And this will be sheep shearing, fruit picking, harvesting of maize, all those areas. This will be the sectors in the construction. It was mainly companies in projects such as Nulu, Bibusile, and others, where they were recruiting engineers, project managers, artisans, mechanics, builders, and those largely you find that they came from countries like Korea, the United Kingdom, Germany, India, China, Thailand, Mozambique, the United Arab Emirates, and so on. So in most cases, that's where, and the next ones give you the statistics in terms of the province, which ones received how many, and where we recommended and where we did not recommend, etc. And this is in terms of corporate. Now, in this corporate, you find that there are farms and so on. And your question was also around the specific farms in the
Mpumalanga, and I've asked the office to check the names of the farms and to check specifically if those farms did apply through the department and the reasons why they were granted. You can see in Mpumalanga, for instance, in total, the applications received were 4, and the total numbers covered were 487, and 562 of those were recommended. Now, if the numbers are as high as is indicated, it could be that we will have to verify, because we must also agree that in some cases, depending on reasons known to the applicants, there are instances where and Home Affairs may need to confirm this issue, especially where instances where people go directly to Home Affairs or appeal directly to Home Affairs, because that then remains beyond us, and that permits are then granted or not granted. What we have given to you, Honorable Chairperson, is information that the Auditor General comes to us and audits, and they want specific files, and we keep those files, and we give them those files, including all the certificates that we recommended to Moses. So this information is, it can be verified in our cases. So if there are farms where in Mpumalanga the numbers are much more higher than those that we know, we may then have to conduct a follow-up investigation jointly with our colleagues in Home Affairs to check the authorization of the payment and so on.
Okay, Mr. Rupo, I don't get what I want to get from this. What I want to know, how do you come about with that bulk? Where does it come from? Do you face Home Affairs with a bulk of things and say, please give these people the permit to go and work in that farm? For instance, the 400 that you're talking about, how did you get to that number that you get people from outside? How did it happen?
The numbers, Honorable Chairperson, would normally be in the application by the farmer and or the private employment agency working on behalf of the farm. They will say, for instance, we've got such a place, or in Mirupi, for instance, we've got this work that we must do. We've searched, we've done whatever, we couldn't find those people, provide proof and all that. And then, like we said, we don't just take the information and agree. We send our inspectors to go and verify. We check on the database, and if we find people, we refer those people to them. And it is only in those instances where we cannot refer people or where we can't find people, we then say to Home Affairs, you can go ahead and give consent.
I think now it is clear. I think you should agree with the gentleman from Home Affairs that you really do this thing. And my worry about this is that you are relying on the farmer or the private employment agencies. So whether there is no money, there are lots of people who are looking for jobs. I think we all agree that this thing of people not wanting to work in farms. You know, local people are not going to work in a farm where they are going to stay in the houses that we saw in those farms in Mpumalanga that had storage problems, that had broken windows. All those conditions, where they will work in the farms for more than normal hours, without uniform, without everything, I promise you, the local people are going to complain
local people are going to run to trade unions, and the farmers are not going to want to take them because they're giving them problems. They're going to want UIF. A number of things that local people are going to demand. Now, you can then say yourself as Department of Labor and be in partnership and agree that people are not. Because once you do the advert, trade unions are going to go there and say, no one can sleep in those places. No one. Because they're asking them, you know, and those farmers, like, they have people in your department, they have people in the Department of Labor. Equally, they have people in the trade union movement. Because when you go there, they'll ask you for Mr. So-and-so, and Mr. So-and-so workers have no knowledge. In fact, they don't want to deal with Mr. So-and-so because Mr. So-and-so, trade unionist Mr. So-and-so, stay there with the management and, you know, brush and go. Has no interest with us. So the whole thing is well worked out by the farmers. And you can't be a partner in that. You can't be a partner in that. So we don't want to hear this thing that there is where South Africans don't want to work. South Africans, they know their rights. They don't need permits. Nobody is going to threaten them. That's why they don't want to work in those conditions. But there are conditions that are fine. They know that it's acceptable conditions. South Africans will go there because they do want to work. Only people who stay under those conditions are the ones who have no permits. And the ones will be threatened every day with all sorts of things because nobody will ever hear about them again because they are here illegally. That we should understand. So no one will hear this thing again. The conditions in the farm where people stay, they must change with immediate effect. Because you can't stay in such places and expect people to have, you know, right minds when they work with their hands and we saw that thing. We saw it. Rest assured, this thing, you can't go around being people are employed by the government and boost and say South Africans are lazy, South Africans don't want to work. Who wants to work in those conditions? No one. And that's why those farmers go outside. They know exactly because they're protecting their own property. They don't want anybody who's going to question them. People have to work, they have to accept what they're teaching them. Those only people are going to dance to their music. And if they don't, then they threaten them because this is everything. You should know that. I hope that you really, from today, going to take us serious when it comes to this country. Because we're going to do, you see, you are right, all these things of the workers, when you saying, announced visit. This is what it said then. An unannounced visit. But as I was sitting here talking to you, we can deal with all what you are saying as Committee of Parliament. We can do it. And fortunately, we have that direction now. We'll have a direct contact with the Home Affairs. We will do it. It will be just a clampdown. So, thank you so much. But please, don't tell us about South Africans who don't want to work. You must ask, why are they refusing? Don't ever tell us about that. Now, I don't think there are questions, members. No further questions. We really are really grateful for having both of departments under one roof. Because it is, as we will be doing, further doing our oversight, we know exactly which door. We will not be faced with those Home Affairs inspectors that we will face with in Mpumalanga that are going to tell us all these things that we can answer. Definitely can answer for people that we send away and to take it to their own. But at least we'll be sure that when we get there, we get the best, dedicated, loyal soldiers to their work. That's what we will be asking for from all of you. And thank you so much. The meeting is adjourned.